Comic Conversations.
It's awesome!
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
You drug dealers are going to prison.
And Alex.
There's a difference in queering off and getting your needs met on the road.
Oh, Jesus.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony of Comic Conversations, and I'm joined as always by my co-host, Alex. Alex, how are you doing today?
Where the fuck did you hear about brother sex? You turn this goddamn camera off right now. That's the best.
Very much so. All right, with that out of the way, let's go into our first segment this week. News. You like Alex? That is the owner of the National Wrestling Alliance.
Billy Corgan. I know.
You there?
I really liked Smashing Pumpkins when I was younger.
Uh-huh.
But, like, then I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's kind of sad that Billy Corgan is still that emo.
Yes, that is Smashing Pumpkins. And guess the name of the song, Alex? It's going to be totally on the nose when you consider our first news story.
I don't actually remember the name of this song.
Doomsday Clock.
Oh, is that why you picked it?
Yeah. Well, I kind of like the song. I remember...
Is this like later Pumpkins?
Yeah, this is later. This is when I think when Ring of Honor was still on pay-per-view. He allowed them to use this song on their pay-per-view.
Ring of Honor is still on pay-per-view.
When they first went on traditional pay-per-view.
Oh, okay.
But
so that would have been after I lost interest in Smashing Pumpkins, is what you're saying?
Yes, when everybody did.
Well, except Ring of Honor.
And the small group of fans that keep it floating.
I don't know, dude. They got more viewers than Lucha Underground and TNA combined, and New Japan in America. Times two.
Wow. When you put
all
it that
of
way.
All those combined times two. Yeah, if you say it like that.
Let me bust out my champagne then.
It sounds, do you work for him?
No.
I don't know why you care. You guys are weird. Him and Dave, they're really weird about that. Like they take personal interest in how much money wrestling companies make.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of Dave Meltzer.
which you also pay. Which I might add.
Yeah, because I like reading The Observer.
Well, there you go. Don't make fun if you still pay.
I don't talk about who draws.
In fact, I don't pay for The Observer currently.
I do.
Well, congratulations.
Oh, wait. No, I don't.
Are we both mooching off Dave?
Don't say that, dude.
No one's listening from the Observer site. Brian is not listening to the show. Dave is not listening to the show.
That's a good point. I was going to say, you'll get him in trouble. I used to laugh, though, when they go on and on about, like, WWE Network, it lets multiple people have the accounts. And I'm like, look at it. I'm like, I'm using somebody else's account to get on your site.
And the board is still free. That was the reason why I kept paying for the longest time. And then I figured out through a glitch, if you stop paying, you can still access the board.
Yeah, that's weird, because, like, I can still post on the board, but I don't have a membership.
Mm.
Which, like, if I lost my membership, you know, like, if I couldn't post on the board, I wouldn't really care, because the board's kind of lame now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nothing's going on.
I think
wrestling's kind of boring now.
Maybe that's why they do it. They realize the board's not enough of a draw to get people to subscribe anymore.
Well, maybe I will... Maybe the board will get really exciting when the WWE Women's Tournament starts.
I sincerely doubt this.
With all of the Japanese women they've hired?
Just Dave and maybe Jim from Virginia will care.
What's Ed?
And San Antonio?
Ed will care.
Remember for the longest time you didn't know who Ed and San Antonio was. You just heard Ed.
Yes, but I heard him on one of those, shows, one of those call-in shows.
Well, there you go. So, and just for folks that don't know, there
you
are.
Probably cut all this out. This is of no interest to anyone.
There are in fact two Daves. There is Dave of the Wrestling Observer, and then
that's Big Dave.
Yeah, and then there's our Dave, who was former co-host on this show, who we regularly ridicule and make him out to be a giant weebo, which he sort of is, but we make him a bigger weebo than he actually is.
Little Dave, he's had games that he had for like months and he hadn't finished them, but he got that Persona 5 and he beat that shit in like 2 days, 100%ed it, dated all the girls in the game, if that is a thing. I don't know.
Well, let's get to the purpose of the segment of the show. News. So Geoff Johns did an interview for Sci-Fi Wire.
And where he spoiled everything.
I don't know if he spoiled anything, because we got a couple of details, but we don't know exactly what the story consists of.
He did that thing where he said, you know, like, hey, I'm coming back comics. I'm doing this Doomsday Clock thing. It's not going to have any tie-ins. It's going to be self-contained. But it's going to affect the entire DC universe. Why did they say that? And he also said it'll mostly be about Superman, but it will deal with Dr. Manhattan. So Geoff Johns comes out and just confirms what everyone knew, but I still would have liked, you know, a surprise. Like at least a surprise reveal instead of Geoff Johns coming out and being like, yeah, it's Doc Manhattan.
No, he didn't say that. He said he plays an intricate part of it. He didn't say for sure it was Dr. Manhattan.
He confirmed Dr. Manhattan is appearing.
So?
And is important.
And that means nothing, really.
You could have not said that and just had that be a surprise in it.
I'm sure there'll still be plenty of surprises in this.
Oh, God. I hate this rumor that it's all Superboy Prime, because nobody likes Superboy Prime.
Honestly, the only people I hear pitching that argument, I think, is either CBR or Newsarama.
Probably CBR. Is Superboy Prime gay? Because if he is, it's probably CBR. You know what? He is. He is kind of gay. By the way, did you see CBR? It was either CBR or Newsarama. They did a list of like the 10 or, yeah. The
wait, 10 wait, 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 wait. Hold on. CBR made a top 15 list? Oh my God.
Well, yeah, but it was like the most iconic LGBTQ characters.
Yes,
oh my God, I raged against this. Like, one of them was like a character from the post-Morrison Doom Patrol, because it was the first transgendered character, but nobody knows who this character is. Another one was fucking Iceman, who nobody cared when they announced he was gay, and he wasn't gay for most of the time. Midnighter and Apollo shared a spot. And here's the other thing with that, like, Because I got on them about this on Facebook, and people are like, well, the characters are kind of tied together. It's like, no, here's the deal. Apollo is not over. Midnighter is. Mm-hmm. So it should have been Midnighter, because Midnighter actively fought against stereotypes. Like, he was a gay dude, but he was a super fucking badass. But you bought him as a badass. Like, it wasn't just like, oh, they're making this guy super tough because he's gay. It's like, no, he was super tough, and he liked fucking dudes. Apollo does not really have a character, and he never has, and he was never developed that much. He's always just been sort of like Superman, and he's Midnighter's boyfriend. So he does not belong on an iconic list. Iceman, who's been gay for 2 years, certainly doesn't belong.
Although I sent you those images of X-Men number one, and there was those panels where Iceman.
He was supposed to be young.
Sure. And like, all the other X-Men are drooling over Jean except Iceman, who's not impressed. Uh-huh.
Dude, she even looked that good. I saw the picture. Like, I wouldn't be impressed either. Maybe he didn't like,
well, she was 16.
Pale,
you shouldn't
pale
be.
Redheads.
Well, she was 16. You shouldn't be impressed.
Well, still, even if I was 16 and look at her fucking dress like Jackie O and shit, I don't want to see that. I want to see a bitch with some big titties and nice ass. That's what I like.
When she's 16?
Yes. I don't care. I don't give a fuck how old she is. Whatever. She got to look good. She didn't look good. And Iceman had my back on that. He's like, fuck, man, she ain't nothing special.
If you weren't married, I'd say there's a good chance that this recording will come back to haunt you.
If there were lines in books where Iceman's like, no, man, I wouldn't hit that. I want to fuck Beast. Like, then I think he was gay.
I remember
he was fucking around with Rogue at one point, and like... Oh, then again, Oh, I'm writing my own story here. See? Rogue, you can't touch her. So see? He picked a girl he couldn't touch.
He was he knew what was up. He didn't want people to know, so he's like, oh, I'll fall for the one girl who I can't touch. I'll say I really want to, but I know
what do you
I
think Gambit did with Rogue all those years? Was she like wearing the gloves and giving him handies and shit?
Maybe.
Is that what was going on?
They wore the skin tight latex suit.
And they just rubbed up on each other?
Mm-hmm.
Man, that would not be a
Wait. If Gambit wore protection, would there be any problem?
Well, I mean, he'd have to wear like shit that covers everything. And a condom. I guess he could just have his dick like pop out of a little hole in the suit.
Mm-hmm.
Man, this fucked up. I don't want to talk about this anymore.
It's a lot of work just for this one girl. I mean, she's admittedly kind of hot, but it's not worth it.
All right. Well, Doomsday Clock, Jeff John said Doc Manhattan's going to be all over it. It's all about Superman, how Superman's the most important thing. I do kind of appreciate that this entire Rebirth thing is hinging on Superman. And how important Superman is.
Well, so far, because as we've seen, this thing is going 2 years, and this comes out in November 2017, and this is about the three-quarters mark, so it's not quite the end yet.
Nah. But, you know, I'll read. Jeff Johns not my favorite writer, but Rebirth was really good, so, like, I'll read this.
I don't know how I feel. On one hand, I like that this is a self-contained story. It's not an event. There's not a million tie-ins. There's not a... You know, an epilogue and a prologue is just a one and done, but at the same time, it's like, oh, so Jeff Johns is just such a big deal. He can come in and do one big book, the most important book in the DC universe, and just go back to doing his movie stuff.
Well, I mean, he did Rebirth, which was a huge deal, and set all these other books up, and he didn't have any help writing that. I'm okay with that. It doesn't bother me. I mean, he has shown that in this storyline, he has written one really good story. So theoretically, he could write another really good story.
So what you're saying is we should just keep him away from the Green Lanterns and he should just be fine.
Dude, I've said before, his Green Lantern run might have been fucking fantastic. I just got attitude against Hal.
I thought you hated the color spectrum. That was his idea.
Oh, I do fucking hate that. That's so lame.
Yeah, see, there you go.
The purple light of love and the blue light of hope light of fear and the...
To be fair, I don't think there is a purple light.
Yeah, there is. There indigo.
Yeah.
That's purple, right?
Yeah.
Honey, is indigo purple?
Alex is talking to his wife.
Huh? Yeah, she said it's bluish purple, so it's like a combination of purple and the Hope Lantern. Saint Seiya, or whatever his name is.
But it's not purple.
Whatever, it's close.
Yeah, it just comes up as, I mean, remember when this thing started, I was like, I don't know, because remember we saw the story, this storyline was going to weave in and out in key titles, and I was like, I'm sort of the idea that you just let writers do what they want, but up until this point, all the tie-ins have been really good, and if anything, it makes a lot of so-so books a lot better.
Yep.
And our second final news story coming from Marvel, the other side of the spectrum, the other side of the tracks, if you will. This one's great because it gives me such pleasure because I hated the idea of this title and the fact that it's canceled brings me such joy. But Marvel cancels Black Panther and the crew after 2 issues.
Jesus. And keep in mind, the Black Panther book itself, I don't know if it still is. I think it is, but it was doing really, really good.
Mm.
So it's the same writer. When this book got announced, what did I say?
I believe you said it was going to be canceled very quickly.
I said 6 issues.
Well, you were wrong. It made it
no, I was right. It got canceled in issue 2, but it's going to go till 6 issues, and he's going to finish the storyline.
Because the 6 issues are done. It's not like it was canceled after 6 issues.
They always go to 6 issues because then you can put a trade up.
Yeah, which
that's why they go to 6 issues.
Which means the book is already done.
Right, but I'm just saying, I said it's got 6 issues. I was 100% right. It's going to get 6 issues. He admitted, he said, this is because of low sales.
Yes, he said this in an interview with TheVerge.com.
Yeah, so let me say this again, CBR fans. You keep asking for diversity, and you keep only buying books with white characters.
I could defend this.
Okay, the America Chavez book is going to get canceled.
No, okay.
Black gay lead.
Okay, see, we're talking to the CBR crew that loves diversity, right? What's their favorite book?
X-Men.
They buy X-Men.
You know why they buy X-Men? You know why they buy X-Men? No, I have this figured out. The X-Men were a metaphor for racism. And now, depending on the writer, they are a metaphor for homophobia. And therefore, they can buy their white superheroes, because 90% of the X-Men are white.
They're white straight superheroes.
Yeah, they're white straight superheroes. They can buy them, or they could have their gay character and their black character on a team with a bunch of white people. By the way, what is the better selling X-Men book, gold or blue?
I believe it's gold.
Is it gold?
Yes.
I apologize then. I was going to say blue is the better book, but if you look at the blue team, everyone is white. And there's one gay guy. And he's not even really gay. So I'm just comic readers. I know most of you are white, but if you keep asking for this and not buying it, eventually they're going to stop giving it to you.
I wonder if the general public is ever going to find out about this, because my thing is, and you've said this before in the past, and I've sort of parodied you because it actually rings true. The people that are going to be outraged about this don't buy comic books. It's the CBR.
No, I think it's because it's people on like Facebook groups and shit who follow comics. I think they probably do buy comics. It's just they don't
not
buy
this one.
No, they didn't buy this. They're not buying America Chavez. They didn't buy the Luke Cage book. They were buying Black Panther, but I think the key was Black Panther was different and it was kind of good. The race or the sexuality of a character does not matter. What matters is the quality of the story. And that can be a combination of art and writing, or just writing, or in some cases, just art. But it is the quality that matters, not what the character looks like.
Not always. Sometimes if it's a book's marketed really, really right and it has the right characters in it, it sometimes can sell particularly well. Because we've seen before in the past, just because you have good writing, you have a good character, doesn't mean it necessarily lead to good sales. I mean, you've always been the one who railed against Kamala Khan, Ms. Marvel. You said, yeah, I hear that she's supposed to be this giant character that everybody likes, but you look at the comic numbers and they're not there.
Okay, it doesn't always work, but if a book isn't good, Luke Cage and Iron Fist, if a book isn't good, they're not going to buy it just because you have a black character in it. And frankly, it's because most comic readers are white males. And I know you're not, but overall, if you did a survey, most of them would be white males. And my evidence for this is entirely anecdotal. I have been to Comic-Con, which is also movie shit, and it's mostly kind of fat white dudes or really skinny white dudes. And I have been to comic shops all across this country, and I mostly see it is owned and staffed by white dudes, and it is visited by white dudes with their white girlfriends.
Or white wives in your instance.
Or maybe their Asian girlfriends.
Like Nerd Dave.
Like Dave, he would bring his Asian girlfriend
who he
to
loves.
A comic shop. Let's go into my local comic store and we can purchase some new manga.
As the Japanese call it.
I don't think he reads manga.
I know.
Actually.
In fact, I was the one thing I was like, hey, if he read manga, that'd be kind of cool, because I've been wanting to kind of get into it because, I don't know, just diversify. And Lord knows I'm not going to watch anime, so I might read manga. You read it from left to right, not right to left, as you would in a gaijin book.
I could never get used to that. I remember when they started doing that, and like I get why they do it, but I could never fucking get used to it. I'd be like, why the fuck do I have to read this book backwards?
Oh, and you were asking about the Black Panther numbers. It's at number 71 with 30,000 sold.
It's dropped a lot, but they were doing kind of a heavy story. So I would have expected that to drop.
I think a combination of it being a number one, and then everyone knows that it has a movie coming down the line. I think that's why it started off
for a while, though.
Yeah, but look at it now. And it's been
doing better than a lot of books we read.
That's true. I'm seeing Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it's two numbers above it is Black Panther, but two below it is Guardians of the Galaxy. So,
well, but Guardians of the Galaxy just relaunched.
Yeah, I bet that'll pop for a number one, and then immediately go back to where it's normally slotted.
Oh, I got some Guardians of the Galaxy news I saw on Facebook.
Oh,
Chris Pratt stole the Star-Lord costume off the set. So you go visit kids in a hospital, sick kids.
Aww.
Chris Pratt is a great guy.
Yeah.
He's my favorite Chris in the Marvel movies. Even though I took that Facebook test and it said, my secret boyfriend is Chris Evans.
You love Hydra.
I do. I love Hydra, I guess.
Oh my God. I didn't tell you. So I went to a comic book convention over the weekend and there were a couple of folks dressed up as Cap and I screamed at the top of my lungs, sometimes across the room, Hell Hydra. And I did the Hell Hydra sign.
There's a sign? Is it the Wolfpack sign?
No, it's the Too Sweet. No, and actually, funny you should bring that up. I saw Dennis Hopeless, and he's the one who put the Too Sweet at the end of the all new X-Men book.
Did you go up to him and Too Sweet him?
I thought about it, but then I decided not to.
You should have done it.
I know.
And then super kicked him.
And then I went to the bathroom and he saw me not wash my hands, and he was disgusted.
Because you washed your hands?
No, because I didn't wash my hands.
Oh, dude. Spreading disease and shit.
Yep. Hey, at least I shower, which is more than I can say for a lot of people at comic book conventions. You know who you are.
Public service announcement, guys. Fucking shower before you go to a convention. Because he's not joking. Like, a lot of you like, fill in the worst stereotypes.
Actually, I've had this explained to me from two fatties. The one thing is they could shower all they want, but they're so fat and they have so many folds that just walking around...
Bullshit. Bullshit.
They sweat a lot, dude.
But you smell a lot worse if you don't shower. Like, even if you're going to be sweaty and gross anyway, like, if you don't shower, on top of that, you're going to smell worse.
I knew
it. So fucking shower, put your fucking Brood on or whatever fuck cologne you wear.
Brood?
Yeah, because they're fucking gross. They wear Brood.
Well, because they're also fat and lazy, so imagine trying to stand up for, like, in the same place for, like, what, 2-3 minutes to take a shower?
They could take a fucking bath.
And the
they
best,
might not be able to fit in.
Yeah, exactly. And the best story I heard was this one dude who went to a hotel. He's like, yeah, the showers are kind of small. I can't really fit in them.
Shit, man. You gotta get into pro wrestling. You got a fucking barrel chest on you. I like a barrel chested heel.
Give him a couple of cheeseburgers.
What you need to do is go down to McDonald's, get yourself some double cheeseburgers. They only cost $1. By the way, I went to a McDonald's recently, and that is not true. The double cheeseburgers are no longer $1.
Didn't that used to be a deal on Sundays? It would be like 39 cents.
I remember when they were only $1. Mm. They had a dollar menu. Now it's like about $3.50 or $1.50.
Well, as we see in the news, McDonald's is under hard times.
By the way, we're doing this because the show's going to be kind of fucking short. We don't have a lot of comments.
We have a whopping 15. Count them. Actually, no.
I thought it was 14.
14. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because we're doing our new thing where if we read a book and we have nothing to say about it, we're not going to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. So initially,
so it cut us down
14. Initially, we had a whopping 17. No, 16. I correct myself. 16.
16. And we're not reviewing Hal Jordan and Green Lantern Corps. It was good, but... Nothing happened.
Here's the thing. Are we going to continue reading that, or are we just going to drop it?
I don't know. I haven't decided yet. And the other one was Shade the Changing Girl, which had really cool art, but...
It basically, Shade was walking the streets of Gotham City and being a goof.
And for some reason, the Statue of Liberty is in Gotham City.
Yeah. Oh, I have a funny Shade story. So this goes back to the comic book convention I was at and me being a general creep. So... So I'm outside the facility, and there's this girl dressed up as Shade the Changing Girl.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm like, her costume is so cool, but I bet she went there, and nobody got it.
You should have taken a picture, because I want to see how she did the coat.
Here's the thing. I was inside my car, and she was walking the street. So I pulled – I was at a stoplight, and I honked my horn until I got her attention. I just gave her the thumbs up, and she smiled, and then I proceeded to drive away because I'm a creep.
Did the coat look cool, though? Because that's how, like, that's what I'd want to see.
Yeah, it was all multicolored, and it was like, I think there was, like, boas in it. It was really cool, but the only thing is, you're going to a comic book convention, a really small one. It's like, I don't know how many people are going to get that reference.
Eh, but still, you know, so as far as I understand, some of these people who like dress up, especially like the women, they're doing it because they really want to fucking make a costume. Mm-hmm. Like that's it. They just want to make a costume and they need somewhere to wear it. So like they don't give a shit if nobody knows what it is. Cause I remember the times I went to Comic-Con, like you'd like see the girls who were dressed up in the costumes and you think like, oh, it'd be really creepy if I asked to take a picture with her, but fucking they love that shit.
No, in 2017, the environment has completely changed. It's really friendly. As long as you're not a creep and don't try to, you know, touch the girl or say creepy things.
No, I'm saying it was like that when I was back there too. Like they weren't wearing a costume so people could not take pictures of them.
Yeah.
Like they want to show off the fucking costume. I don't even think it's like a look at my ass and titties thing. Like I think it's like I'm proud of this fucking thing that I probably spent a lot of time making.
Well, to be, so. I will say this. If I look like them, I'd be all for down showing my body too.
You know what? The most and this is going to make me sound super gay. One of the most impressive costumes I ever saw. You know Hawkman's costume?
Yeah.
It's pretty much a fucking vest and like Speedos.
Mm-hmm.
I saw a fucking dude dressed as Hawkman. Fucking dude was built like Hawkman.
There's always a Hawkman at a convention that just for some reason why goes into like pain lengthening strength to make his costume look phenomenal.
It wasn't just the costume, it was the dude, cause most of the Hawkman costume is like, he's damn near naked, he looks like a pro wrestler.
No, he's
and
got
this
pants.
Fucking dude looked like it was fucking Randy Orton walking around.
Well,
but
as wings
and shit.
Well, maybe Randy Orton nowadays, cause for the longest time Randy Orton never wore pants, and Hawkman always wears pants.
Well, yeah. Randy Orton fucking wore pants on that House of Horrors match.
Yeah, the one time he wears pants.
Yeah, he fucking rolls up in a limo with pants on and no shirt. Oh, I laughed my ass off.
It was great. It was quite excellent.
Let's move on with this, because fucking we're talking about comic-related things, but we're not talking comics.
That's true. All right, with that out of the way, let's go into our next segment,
this week's books.
That is the boss battle theme from Super Mario Bros. 2. Isn't that right, Dave?
Tony?
Yes?
The name of that game in Japan was, Doki Doki Paniku. Yumikojo Doki Doki Paniku in the Nippon. And it was altered for American release to become Super Mario Bros. 2, later released in Japan as Super Mario Bros. USA, with no save feature, because it was originally on the Famicom Disk System. Thank you.
Remember, Alex pitched me that idea. He's like, I got a great idea. The only problem is, I don't know what to use to set it up. Because I don't know when we're ever going to be talking to Super Mario Bros. 2. And then a light went on today when I was thinking about doing show prep. I was like, wait, it's my week to pick music this week. I'm going to pick Super Mario Bros. 2.
He's going to set me up and I'll have to correct him, or Dave will have to correct him.
And he said it couldn't be done.
It's funny too, because that's one of those things when like you watch these fucking assholes on YouTube, mm-hmm. and they're like, most shocking changes to games or whatever fucking list they have, and they bring up Super Mario Bros. 2, like fucking everybody doesn't already know that.
Oh, my favorite one was this one guy, I won't say who it was on YouTube, was like, I'm so sick of these teenagers giving me history lessons on Nintendo, like I didn't live it.
I fucking lived through that shit, motherfucker. We used to get Electronic Gaming Monthly.
No, I'm talking about the ones that go back and say, Nintendo saved the gaming industry in 1984.
That's what I'm saying though, but it's like, I fucking read video game magazines, but that's all we fucking read when we were kids.
Mm-hmm.
Cause we didn't want to read books. Like, we read Goosebumps and shit, cause that was the bomb when we were kids, but you want to fucking read video game magazines cause you like video games. And, so.
And honestly, we didn't just read it just because we wanted to read it. That's the only thing we had because there was no internet. And if we wanted scoops on games, and that's scoops with a Z, we had to go to the gaming magazines. And that's all we got. We got a couple of, we got a write-up and then we got a couple images and that was it.
Yeah. And if you're fucking like me, like you were a game fan and you thought every fucking Japanese game was good. And you didn't realize most of the Japanese games that didn't come over here, they didn't come over because they were shit.
Mm-hmm.
But fucking Game Fan were like the original Weebos. And they'd be like, oh, this fucking RPG came out in Japan. It's the best game ever. And because they got cute talking animals in it. And it's fucking amazing. It's so good. And then years later, somebody would fucking fan translate it when ROMs came out and shit. And you'd download this. If you were me, you downloaded it very quickly on your cable modem.
Ooh.
But if you were a fucking tool, you download that shit on your 56K and it would take like 3 days to download. And then you play it with the translation patch. You'd be like, wait, this game is shit. Game Fan lied to me.
Okay, because I know there's going to be people that listen and take your task for this. Can you think of an example of a game that was like that?
What? That was...
That was touted as being great. And then when you finally get around to playing a English patched version, and it was terrible.
God, there was this, okay, there were Square games late in the Super Nintendo's life that never came over. And one of them, it was like a fucking strategy game, and there were dragons. Behemoth Lagoon.
Ah, okay.
Shit game, but they told you it's fucking amazing. And then,
I think you're gonna
Live a Live.
Okay.
Was another one, and that one was shit, but they said it was fucking great. The characters in that were named Red and Blue, and one of them had red hair, and one of them had blue hair. That was the quality of writing.
Didn't Pokemon have that as well?
Yeah, but Pokemon was like for kids. Like, it was directed at children's. And no, the main character was whatever you named him.
But I think in storyline, there was supposed to be named Red and Blue.
The bad guy was named Gary.
But I believe in the default names are Red and Blue. So if you bought the red version, you would be Red, and your rival would be Blue. And vice versa.
But when you played the game, you were fucking, like, green, because Game Boy. That was weird.
That's true. I didn't start playing Pokemon until Game Boy Color came out, and everything was already in color, so...
Okay.
All right, let's go over this week's books, which include Eternal Warrior Awakening 1, Silver Surfer 11, Kingpin 4, X-Men Blue 3, Uncanny Avengers 23, Avengers 7, AD After Death 3, Bug Number 1, Titans 11, Wonder Woman 22, Action Comics 979, Justice League of America 6, and to open up this week's books, we have Grass Kings Number 3, from Boom Studios, writer Matt Kent, and art by Tyler Jenkins.
So in the last issue of Grass Kings, the drunk fella, who's supposed to be running the Grass Kingdom, but is an alcoholic because his daughter died, drowned in the lake, and made him really sad. This woman showed up drowning in the lake, and he saved her. In this issue, we found out she was the sheriff of the neighboring town's wife, and the sheriff of the neighboring town has wanted an excuse to basically go to war with the Grass Kingdom, take them all out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, having his wife there would cause a problem, and he had sent Big Dan, I think his name was, to go and check shit out, and he was looking through dude's window, and he saw her, and he's like, oh, you're fucked now. And he goes to beat the shit out of him, and the sheriff's wife shot him in the head and killed him. So dude calls, I think it's his brother, the Grass Kingdom sheriff, and he's like, well, we gotta dispose of the body. Gotta hide the body.
And his first thought is like, let's just throw the body in the river. And he's like, no, that's the first place police are gonna look.
Yeah, cause they know about this shit and they'll dredge the lake, so we can't do that. What they apparently ended up doing was, they fucking, like, put him in some place and, like, had birds come eat him.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be what they did. I don't know what that place was, but the birds ate him. But they, back on the other side of the lake, they know that Big Dan is missing. And they know that they sent Big Dan to
bring in the
Grass
daughter.
Kingdom.
Yeah.
So they don't know the wife is there,
mm-hmm.
but they know that Big Dan is gone.
What I thought was interesting was we thought she had drowned, and she did that on purpose because she was like, I think the guy that found her initially was like, aren't there other ways to get out of a city than through swimming? It's like, that must have taken you hours. She's like, yeah, but it was the only way to guarantee that people wouldn't follow me. They'd probably think I just drowned in the water.
Yeah, she figured nobody would think she would actually swim all the fucking way across this shit and get there, because who the fuck does that? Mm-hmm. If you were going to get away, you drive out of town or you take a bus or something. So if they ever figured out she went to the water, they'd be like, well, she must have drowned. So, yeah, no, this is, it's a good little book.
Yeah, I'm surprised we put this on the list, because there's not a whole lot to say. I mean, it was all very straightforward, it's all very good, but.
Well, because I want people to know it's good.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Well.
I mean, the art's nothing to write home about, but it does, oh, by the way, spoilers. The Finn Balor documentary that is on the network now,
mm-hmm.
another really good WWE documentary, and it follows him losing to Roman Reigns clean.
Congrats.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah,
but Grass Kingdom, good.
Yes, very much so. All right, let's move on to DC with Justice League of America, issue 6, writer Steve Orlando, art by Andy McDonald. This issue was great. I like this book way more than the Justice League book.
Oh, Justice League of America?
Yeah.
Yeah, so do I. And we're not reading Justice League Justice League until something happens. So, okay, so this followed up the last story with the weird dude who was making weapons in the town. And Lobo had got shot with something that was like super poison, like mystical poison.
It was an ancient artifact that when Lobo got stabbed with it, he wouldn't be able to regenerate.
Yeah, because it was such a strong poison, but it was a magical poison, and that's why it worked on Lobo. But Lobo still didn't die, he just couldn't heal. So Ray is talking to him, and Lobo's like, alright, what you gotta do is you gotta cut my heart out.
He's like, wait, won't that kill you? He's like, yeah, but I've done it like a million times already. Like,
but then I'll heal. Like, I can't, as long as this poison is running, is in my heart and pumping through my body, I cannot heal. If you remove my heart, I will grow another heart, and then I will be fine. And like, stupidly, Ray doesn't want to do it. Like, he's, oh no, I can't do that. And it's like, dude, he's gonna fucking heal. Like, this is the only way to make it better.
I can defend this. You're Ray. You're new to the superhero gig, much less ever meeting Lobo, and he's asking you to remove his heart?
Well, but he told him that it's the only way he could heal.
Yeah, but even after he took the heart, there was like a moment where he was like, and he just passed out.
Alright, well, fair enough. But he did it. He ends up fucking stabbing him through the heart with his Ray powers.
And you mean to tell me if someone has something wrong with their heart and they tell you they have to stab it, you mean to tell them you're going to jump at the opportunity?
Well, no, because I don't live in a superhero-filled world, but if a fucking alien big motherfucker who I've seen get in fights before and, like, fucking take axes to the head and
but
shit,
that's the problem.
He lives,
you haven't
I'm probably
seen
gonna believe him.
You haven't seen that, though.
He has, though, because he's fought with Lobo.
The one time, and I don't think anything happened to him.
It's that Lobo probably got hit with something. Batman could have told him I fucking blew Lobo's head off and he lived.
Yeah, but I don't think Batman was there. I think he was preoccupied with other things.
I should have told Matt. But anyway, they keep up the fight, and they end up winning. Lobo obviously comes back and kicks ass. They made it out like he was going to kill the dude,
mm-hmm.
but he didn't kill him.
He just wanted to make Batman mad.
The fight wraps up, and then we move to character development. And the different things they did was the guy who was helping the bad guy build the weapons, he ended up coming to the Hall of Justice, or whatever the fuck they're calling it. And he's really good at building shit. Like, that's his gimmick. So Batman, like, hired him to build shit. What's the girl's name?
God, I know what you're talking about, too.
Animal Man. powers.
Let me see if I can find her. I forget her name, though.
Vibe?
That's, it's not Vibe. At least I don't think
Vixen.
It is. Vixen. There we go. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
The animal
Vixen,
woman.
Since the town, like, the town was going down the shitter because, like, their only business left, and that's why they were making the weapons for this guy. Because they're all yelling, we saved your town and shit. Vixen, she runs a company, and she said she's going to set up a fucking non-profit shit here to help the people out. And since she's super famous, if they did that, they could get on, like, the government disaster relief
or she
stuff.
Said, and or she them. Says business is... Yeah, she says businesses, and she gives, like, a dirty look to Batman. Yeah,
she looks at Batman like Wayne Enterprises need to build some shit here. I like it how Batman has just fucking unlimited money, and he can do this, because he did this in another storyline, where he's just like, yeah.
I don't know if it was either this book or the other Justice League book. I think it was the Justice League book where the city had kind of, like, a lot of the...
It was the Justice League book.
Yeah, where a lot of the houses were blown up, and then Batman's all, oh, I'll just pay for everything and build new houses.
So he's doing it again. Like, his business is just, he has to explain this shit. So they did that, and then they cut to, Lobo and Adam. The young Adam, who are apparently gonna be friends, because Lobo's talking to him, and he's like, you know, I don't like people. He's like, basically, I don't really like anything. You know, I kill people for money. But what I really like is dolphins, which has always been a thing with Lobo. He fucking loves dolphins. And he explained, the reason I love dolphins is because a dolphin never has a bad thought.
Ah, that's not true.
Dolphins are known for, like, you know, if somebody's fucking drowning, like, a dolphin will save you. Or if a fucking shark is going to eat somebody, like, the fucking dolphins will attack the shark.
Yeah,
like, there are many more stories. Or a dolphin will try to fuck you.
Yeah, I was about to say, only because they want to have sex with you.
Still, that's, you know, that's nice. But dolphins, you often hear stories about dolphins saving people. Dolphins are good creatures. So Lobo respects this. He likes them. And he said Adam reminds him of a dolphin.
I believe one dolphin saved all aquatic life.
Mm.
Went to space and all.
So those two are buddies now, and then Killer Frost. Oh, and, Ray is trying to get in the pants of, the dude building shit. I don't know if you picked up on that.
Let's see if I don't quite remember that.
In the pre-writing things, they established that Ray was a gay dude.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so he was kind of hanging around this guy, and, like, he took his mask off and said he'd be his buddy and was hanging out with him. I think he wants to get in his pants. Just because it's comics now. But he is gay. He's been gay from the beginning, so it's okay. I don't know if the other dude's gay, but we'll find out. So they had that, and then Killer Frost was hanging out, and she might have a cure for being Killer Frost.
But that wasn't all that happened during this issue. She accidentally killed a couple of dudes.
Oh, sort of. There was a guy, and he had a gun pointed at his family, like, you know, wife, husband, kids, and he was gonna fucking kill him. He was one of the bad guys, and Killer Frost comes in, and she, like, froze his arm up to the shoulder and then shattered it, which probably would kill you. And then she goes, please don't tell anyone about this. But, like, it wasn't like she was actively trying to kill him. It was, she was caught up in the moment. She was trying to save him.
Yeah, but then Mockingbird was sort of talking to her, and you kind of had the, not Mockingbird, Black Canary was talking to her. You're wondering maybe if she knew or not.
Yeah, but, I mean, it all got, like, thrown out when it's like, oh, but I might be cured. So, we'll see how that goes. I don't know. But that's something. I'm not, I think Adam and Lobo is kind of fun. Especially since Adam is clearly not comfortable with Lobo. And, you know, doing stuff with Ray is cool. Killer Frost, I have no interest in this character.
Cause it's a one note thing. It's like, oh, she wants to be good, but she's falling into her old habits. And then also her powers are kind of making it not easy for her either.
Yeah, her one half of her character is every villain turned hero character ever, and the other half is rogue.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't find her interesting. I don't find her character design interesting. I have a really hard time caring about her. But the other characters I like.
Well,
so,
I don't know, Black Canary and Vixen, they kind of feel like
they haven't done much with them yet. Vixen, I think she's a little try-hard, but yeah, her powers are cool.
Vixen has more potential than Black Canary. Black Canary is just sort of just there.
Yeah, Black Canary I've always read as, like, Green Arrow's girlfriend. And I've never... But, like, I didn't read, like, Birds of Prey and shit or whatever she was last over in. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know, maybe
but
she's
But in this
than
book,
that.
She's sort of just there.
Yeah. I still like her more than Killer Frost.
I like Killer Frost more because at least she has one note.
Well, they've done stuff with Killer Frost. They haven't done much with Black Canary yet.
Yeah, but what were you gonna do?
I'll give her a character.
Oh, we're gonna have one issue where she runs up against Green Arrow again. Ooh, yippee!
Oh, you don't know. We'll see. They can do something with her. But yeah, that was Justice League of America. It's good.
Great book. So as long as we're talking great book, let's talk Action Comics 979. Writer Dan Jurgens, art by Patrick Zeiker.
This was so much better than Justice League of America.
Well, we're building. Well, I don't know if it's going to maintain because...
This was fucking great. Like, yeah. This is how you get a heel over. I fucking watch pro wrestling, and I see them fuck up heels all the time. And then I read Action Comics, and Dan Jurgens fucking gets Cyborg Superman over, like, the fucking biggest badass on Earth.
I will say this. I will attempt to defend the WWE writers. Dan Jurgens does not have Vince McMahon looking over his scripts and saying, "This sucks. Write it again from the beginning."
Fair enough. Have Superman go over while they're building the team to stop him. It worked great with the Nexus. Yeah, it's fucking... No, but what they did in this was we found out Hank Henshaw was gathering up villains. He fixed Metallo. He got Blank. Out of Superman's prison, he brought Eradicator back, and then they were going to go get Mongol. The problem was, Hank Henshaw is not Cyborg Superman in this world, but Cyborg Superman is another guy who, for some reason, he remembers what came before the New 52, apparently. So, we don't know why, but he does. And I imagine this is all connected, because if Superman is so important in all this, then whoever's pulling the strings... probably, like, said, "Oh, hey, you got your memory back. You can remember this shit." So, what happened was, they go get Mongol. And, you know, storyline consistency, Mongol was still trapped by the Black Mercy flower.
That was so cool, because sometimes you'll see and we'll wonder, like, "Wow, when does this happen? When does this take place?" But they were quick to add notes of, this is when that happened in the Book of Trinity, and I think they also made references to other things that had happened in the Superman book.
Yeah, well, because this all, he's trying to keep this, like, in continuity. So, the book did open up with Mongol murdering Superman.
Oh, Superman begging off Mongol. "Please, yeah. Mongol, don't kill me, I beg you."
And then he crushes his head, but, so, they get Mongol, and you know, Mongol, he don't want to work for anyone else. And they have to go to the destroyed Himalayan Fortress of Solitude 2.0. They go to that, and he's looking for this, it's like a rock. It's basically a rock that grants a wish. So, they get it, and Mongol wants to keep it, but then Henshaw appears, and he's like, "You used to work for me, motherfucker. You don't deserve this shit." And he uses it to make himself Cyborg Superman again. Mongol doesn't remember him, by the way. That's kind of important. Mm-hmm. Cause, you know, their big team up was after Superman died, they went and they did the, blowing up Coast City, and that's why Hal Jordan became Parallax and all that shit. Like, they were behind it. But, Mongol didn't remember any of this cause Hank Henshaw was not Cyborg Superman until he saw him, and then he suddenly remembered. But, Cyborg Superman beat the fuck out of Mongol.
He's all, "This, like, is for you doing this to me. Now you're going to kiss my hand."
Yeah, he fucking made him get on his knees and kiss his fucking hand What a heel. And he got the heat by beating up the other heels who were going to work for him.
Yeah.
You didn't have to job out the babyface to do that. That's fucking balls. That was great. And they made him come off like the biggest threat. Like, if a badass as big as Mongol, who, keep in mind, in that storyline they're referring to, they never beat Mongol. They never even really fought him. They just put a fucking flower on his chest. Like, they contained him, but they couldn't beat him. And Eradicator Superman had a hard time with, and we don't know what new Metallo can do, but he's presumably strong, and Blank is fucking, you know, mind control shit, so he's strong. He's got a really fucking good team here. And Superman might be fucked. We don't know.
I sincerely doubt that.
I don't think he's gonna die, but they did lead in, though. His team's not done. He said to really get Superman, we need one more person. We need Zod. So apparently there, I don't know where Zod currently is. He's like, on this, I don't know they, if he's they still showed, in the
they showed, he's in the Suicide Squad title right now.
Oh, he is?
Yeah. They showed it at the end. They're like, next issue, Suicide Squad, Zod something. I don't remember what it was, but they alluded that.
Or they're going to go and the Suicide Squad has something that they need to get Zod.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, they're going to go get Zod then. So it's going to be Zod, Mongol, Blank, Metallo, Cyborg, Superman. That's a fucking awesome team.
Revenge Society. Is that what they're called?
The Superman Revenge Society.
Yeah, they're just calling this Revenge, but I love it because, I mean, I know a little bit of it because obviously I've seen every single cartoon and they've alluded to this, but it's nice that I'm getting the legit one. That's the one thing that I love about this DC Rebirth and them sort of shunning away the New 52. This feels like I'm reading real DC.
Yeah, and well, and the other thing is this is like an old tactic for Superman. Mm-hmm. It's like Spider-Man had like the Sinister Six. Like none of us can beat Spider-Man on our own, so we'll team up. But the thing is, like Spider-Man, he's not on the level of Superman.
You don't say.
Superman is such a fucking big deal that you can't just take like a bunch of moderately powered guys and team them up. And think they're gonna fucking take, like, the fucking Flash's Rogues Gallery ain't gonna fight Superman. They're gonna lose. These guys, though, since they're all super powerful,
mm-hmm.
You put them together and it's like, okay, maybe they equal Superman now. Which is what you have to do if you're writing Superman correctly, because the weakness people have with Superman is they have to find some way to exploit his weakness because it's hard to make a threat to him. So somebody has to have kryptonite or somebody has to have magic. Well,
to me, now it's just you just go after his family.
Well, you could do that too. And they sort of alluded to that because, Superman finally decided he's moving away from the farm. He's going to move to Metropolis. Cause they wanted, well, number one, Lois said the commute is getting to her, but the other one is they thought Jonathan could use like a little more culture, a little more variety, and you're not going to get that in the fucking country.
How dare they?
With evil fucking.
Don't spoil
neighbor.
It.
I know. Fucking evil neighbor, though.
The thing I like about you, I was not spoiling it. I'm sure. Like 90% of the people listening to this already know what those
spoilers. Yeah, because it's fucking cool. But the good news is the other Superman title has a super fucking cool villain coming up. This Superman title has a bunch of cool villains coming up. They have done such a fucking good job with Superman since Rebirth.
Yeah.
And like everybody knows I'm like the biggest Grant Morrison fan on earth. When DC relaunched and he wrote Superman, I read it for like 3 issues and I'm like, yeah, this isn't the Grant Morrison I like. It's too normal. It's a little boring. I don't like this.
See, maybe now I need to read that now because I do like when Grant Morrison is kind of normal.
No, it was too normal. Oh, okay. Like I read Grant Morrison stories because he'll do something different with the character. Like he wrote Batman for 5 years and I fucking absolutely loved every minute of it. It was fantastic and it was weird and different. He would say he just did all the old shit, but it's not really what he did. But with Superman, I just thought he was kind of like Like, they told him, yeah, it's Superman, you could do what you want. He never really went anywhere with him. Like, Grant Morrison wrote All-Star Superman, which I fucking loved. His run on Action Comics, I think it was not All-Star Superman. Mm. It was very much safe, traditional Superman. You know, it was boring.
Yeah, that was in continuity Superman, so you had the handcuffs on him, so.
Yeah, and that's fine. But, I mean, this is in continuity, and it's doing things that don't hurt Superman as a character, don't hurt what anybody else wants to do with him, but they're both building up villains.
You know what this is probably leading to? If Rebirth is everything sort of a return to form?
Luther being a heel?
Yeah!
I've been fucking waiting for it for so long. I love Lex Luthor as Superman's villain because, you know, Superman is like God and Lex Luthor is just a dude. And that's why he hates Superman. Mm-hmm. And it's the fucking greatest. That is the greatest. I much prefer Luthor and Superman to Joker and Batman. Because my problem with Joker and Batman was I do like the Joker, but Batman is kind of fucking crazy. And Joker is totally crazy. And they're not similar because Joker's completely fucking insane and Batman's just a little nutty. But they're closer than Superman and Luthor are. Superman is the ultimate good. Like, beyond reproach good, never does anything bad. Luthor is just a dude who can be good, but he's usually bad, but he's like an evil capitalist. And he goes against Superman. Because Superman makes him feel like he has a small penis. it's a much more grounded story, even though it's dealing with Superman. And I fucking love that. I love Luthor's speeches about how much he hates Superman, and I really fucking miss him.
It'd be great if at the end of all this, it's Luthor who's been behind the Rebirth stuff.
No, that wouldn't make any sense.
It was him pulling the strings of Doc Manhattan as opposed to Ozymandias. Ozymandias, because it seems like, you know.
I don't think Ozymandias is pulling the string. If it is Ozymandias, I don't think he's pulling the strings. I think he's working with him. It's going to be Superboy Prime pulling the strings.
Everyone's going to be so disappointed. I mean, the signs are there and people at CBR are talking about it, but I'm like.
They could make him cool. Like, that's the thing. It's like. You know, it's like, oh god, Superboy Prime is so lame, but it could be cool.
That's true. They've over the years they've made things that have been sort of been taboo or some kind of lame into kind of a big deal. I mean, Grant Morrison got Batfink over?
Batmite.
Oh, Batmite.
Yeah, he got Batmite over.
So
you never know.
Who's
the
say
fucking Batman of Zur-En-Arr?
Wonders can happen. Like, example would be like our next book. If you told me someone would have got me to care about Wonder Woman, I would have called you a liar. Wonder Woman 22, writer Greg Rucka, art by Blekis Evely.
Yeah, so this book starts out and they're selling Wonder Woman's vagina. No, not really.
can I say the artist Evely here? Love the art.
I was gonna say the art was good, but I didn't like it as much as the last artist.
Oh, I loved it.
I thought they made her a little too cute, but the story was okay. So, and by the way, I think Rucka's run is ending soon because both storylines are ending in the next two issues.
Yeah, they're converging, and now it's coming to an end. Yeah.
So he'll probably do one issue after that or a couple issues, and then he'll be off the book and I'll stop reading it.
I will say this. DC kind of knows this run's really good because they announced that I think June 2nd is going to be Wonder Woman Day, and they are going to be reprinting the number ones of this. So they know it's really, really good.
Is that when the movie's coming out?
Yes. But the thing is, here's the thing. They could print out any number one, or they could choose to print out the latest issue of Wonder Woman. They're purposely using the number one of this run.
By the way, can I say, just say this now, like, obviously I like Wonder Woman. I watched the newest trailer for that, and I do not have high hopes for this
movie. You know, everyone's noticing. I know you live in your bubble to a degree. Everyone's noticing how the publicity for this thing is just completely not there. Like yeah. DC's actively trying to bury this thing.
Well, because the DC movies overall have not been terribly
good. But here's the thing. All of them have been promoted well. Batman vs. Superman was promoted well. You kind of knew the weeks out when it was coming out. Suicide Squad, you knew it was coming out. You saw a million trailers for this. Wonder Woman's been kind of buried. Like, it comes out in less than a month, and I've barely heard of it. And I think this I've seen the trailer maybe once on TV.
Yeah, I just... it didn't look like... Okay, my wife, who... only has a passing interest in comics. Mm. I talked to her about it today, and she goes, I don't want to go see it in the theater. She goes, but I hope it does well, and I hope it's good. And that was what she gave me. She's like, I hope that a female superhero movie does good. She liked Jessica Jones. Wonder Woman is not Jessica Jones.
Yeah, I would say this: the Jessica Jones will sadly have to be the champion of the female superheroes, which is kind of
she's not even a superhero.
Which is kind of sad when you consider, you know.
Well, she's more realistic.
There we go. But I was trying to think of a nice word for it. You got it perfectly. She's more.
No, I'm not being a dick. As a character, she is a more fully developed character than Wonder Woman, who is like this. Wonder Woman doesn't really have flaws. Jessica Jones is made up of flaws.
Can we get somewhere in the middle where, you know, it's a person that's kind of likable?
Captain Marvel.
That has their flaws.
Marvel makes better movies.
Yeah, but it's they can't do miracles, though. They can't make Captain Marvel interesting.
Hey, we liked like 2 issues of her book.
Yeah, and then we dropped it.
Well,
how many times? Let's talk about this now. How many times have we tried to read Captain Marvel as long as we've been doing this podcast? 3 times?
Twice.
4 times?
Twice.
Only no,
twice.
It's at least 3.
Yeah, no, because one of them we skipped. We tried the first one, and we didn't like it, so we stopped. And then the second one, we said, well, we didn't like the last one, so we're probably not going to like this one. We have a heavy week. Let's not read it. And then then we stopped. By the way, dude, the Wonder Woman movie will have one good thing about it. There's going to be so many Wonder Woman porn parodies.
What do you mean there's going to be?
Are there already?
Yes, I can assure you there are.
I'm not as dialed into the...
Well, as a married man, you aren't.
To the... it's married men like porn. It's just I'm not, you know, I'm not super. I'm kind of a nerd that way. I don't know a lot about porn. I like my wife.
You can like your wife and porn.
You know, can I tell a funny porn story?
Sure. We got 13 books. We might as well.
Okay, so I got Plex for streaming to my computer, and man, this is gonna make me sound bad. We open up Plex, and there's a bunch of Asian porn on it. And Lauren immediately goes, what the fuck? This isn't yours. You don't like Asian porn. And I'm like, I look, and I go, no, that's correct. I don't. I mean, I know I joke about it with Dave a lot. I do not have a great love for Asian women.
It's okay,
I do. It's not my thing. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. I have, you know, nothing against Asian women. It's just in general, it's not my thing. So we see all this Asian porn. And what we found out was, apparently, I had put in someone else's Plex server.
Yeah, that was mine, Alexis.
Yeah, I don't know where I got it, but you can log into somebody else's server and you can watch all the shit they have. So apparently I had gotten someone's Plex server and it was just full of Asian porn. Stuff called like Happy Tugs. And we didn't watch any of it. I immediately went to my computer and I searched. Cause Lauren's like, well, Jack wouldn't have downloaded that and you wouldn't have downloaded that. And I go, no. So I do a search on my computer and the files weren't anywhere. And that's how I found out. The sad thing about this was, whoever server this was, he had nothing but Asian porn on it. So, like, I was looking for, like, oh, maybe he's got some new movies on here or something, and there was nothing. It was just Asian porn. The happy, huge disappointment.
The Happy Tug, was there any Ebony Rhythm Sticks involved?
I don't know, because I didn't watch it. I could only see the preview picture. Which, it appeared to take place in a massage parlor.
Ah.
So it wasn't even original Asian porn. But anyway, getting back to Wonder Woman, this book opens up and they're auctioning off a date with Wonder Woman for charity. Mm-hmm. And Batman and Lex Luthor, or Bruce Wayne and Lex Luthor, are getting in a bidding war for her.
Why would Batman care? I mean, if he wanted to,
well, because he doesn't want Luthor to, he doesn't trust Luthor.
But Luthor's cool, supposedly.
Well, yeah, but he still doesn't trust him because he's Lex Luthor. So, yeah, they had that. So then the woman whose kid, the woman whose kid had the thing done to her by Ares' kids, the soul taken or whatever, she bid $15 million. She got a date with Wonder Woman, and they like go out to get burgers at a fast food place or something. And they're talking, they're having a good time, and then she's like, all right, let's go somewhere else. And they go to the car, and they're being followed, and they drive out to the country, and she has Wonder Woman fight them. And it turns out she had her living AI analyze the frequency that the Lasso of Truth emitted to use it to match it up to map data so they could find Themyscira. And Wonder Woman flies by the window and she's like, hey, I knew you were fucking around with this. You ain't gonna find Themyscira, whatevs. And she leaves.
My favorite part is she's like, I'm being wanted after these guys and I hired you because I knew you wouldn't kill them. He's like, I have my own man. I have my own team, but I know they would probably kill these men. That's the reason why I spent all this money to hire you.
And she reveals to her that she knew something was up because she found the broken watch of Cheetah. when she was still human, and she's like, I know you're up to something. So she's on to her. But the thing is, this chick's not really doing anything bad. Like, she wants to find Themyscira, which is apparently going through a war right now.
And she wants to do this all for her daughter.
Yeah, it's just for her daughter. Like, I mean, it's bad in that they want to find Themyscira so they can, like, bring their dad back and, like, destroy Themyscira and, I don't know, kill all the gods or something. We're not really sure of Ares' plan yet. He's apparently in prison.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not good, but she is doing it for a good reason. Like, she is not evil. She did nothing evil before her daughter got put in this horrible predicament. So, yeah, and we're going to get finales to this and the other story, and they are pretty much tied together now.
Yeah, so they're finally intersecting. Everything's finally coming to a pass. So it's good. I like this run. It's a shame it's ending, but what are you gonna do?
Well, I mean, it's ending after he did a full story, though. It's not like it's, you know, oh, we got this new thing and it's amazing, and now we're gonna stop it. And everyone said, no, they got to an end. It's okay.
Well, with one story ending and one beginning, let's talk Titans Issue 11, writer Dan Abnett, art by Brent Booth. The Lazarus Contract Part 1.
This is a good start. They're still trying to babyface Deathstroke a little bit.
Well, they've always done that. Even I recently read the original Judas Contract, and that was basically a Deathstroke story.
Yes, largely. But so what happened was they showed the Titans when they were the Teen Titans fighting Ravager, which is his son, and he died while fighting them because Hive, they basically tried to give him the powers his dad has, but it like didn't really work on him, and he had a heart attack while fighting them. So he blamed the Titans for his death, and he goes to grab his son, and he's like, I'm gonna fucking get you kids for this, and your dog too. And he takes him away. So now we're in present day, and they're fighting some goons who they thought were Hive, but it turns out they're not, and then found out they were hired. But by who? Well, by Deathstroke, who somehow fucking captured Flash, of all people. He captured Flash, and he puts him on a treadmill, which electrocutes him if he doesn't keep running.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trying to convince Flash, he's like, listen, you can travel through time. He's basically telling him, travel through time and stop my kid from dying.
He's on,
and Flash,
do this for me.
And I'll never be Deathstroke again.
Exactly. That was such a great hook. And Flash was like, yeah, I would like to do that. And I know I have the powers to do that, but I really don't want to abuse it. And the last time I tried, did something like this, it didn't really work out well.
And you know, they're looking for him and they can't find him. And then Deathstroke goes, well, I was worried you'd say this, but that's okay. I got a backup, and reveals he has Kid Flash, which is how we're going to, it's how we're going to have the connection to the Teen Titans book. So at least that makes sense. But Kid Flash is questioning, how can you be Wally West? I'm Wally West. And I remember these guys haven't met each other yet.
No, they've met, but they don't know his name. He just knows
the name. Yeah, he just knew he was a Flash.
Yeah.
Well, now he knows he's Wally West, and maybe this is going to lead to Barry having to tell him about this alternate timeline shit.
And I'm sure young Wally West is going to take this great.
And Flash, not Kid Flash, adult Flash, he believed Abracadabra. That the reason he wasn't around was because he threw him through the time stream,
mm-hmm.
which is not what actually happened. I'm shocked Barry hasn't filled him in.
Barry is being fast and loose with the facts with everybody here.
Yeah, because like Barry knows what's going on. Yeah, is it just me or does he seem like he's being a little...
shady?
Yeah. Like, what's up with that? What's up with that?
I was waiting for you to say it. And as long as we're talking about things you say, can I compliment you on calling one the young Kid Flash and the other one Wally West?
No, I called him Flash and Kid Flash. Oh, okay. I thought in the context of this story.
You didn't say the black one and the white one?
No, I was going to say you don't have to say... I don't have to indicate that Flash is not Barry.
Yeah, well, yeah,
Barry
yeah,
is not in the Titans.
Yeah, so there's Flash and then there's Kid Flash in this specific crossover.
By the way, I'm downloading Wonder Woman Year One. Wonder Woman I never read.
I thought you were going to say I'm downloading Wonder Woman porn, because we were just talking about the Asian porn.
I'll look that up later.
What's Wonder Woman Year One? Is that the Grant Morrison story?
It was the Grant Morrison one, which I imagine it's good, but I haven't read it. I can't find it, though.
If we have a slow week, we should read that.
See if it's good. It's really long. Like, it's a big triple-size graphic novel.
Well, we read something that was triple long this week, and we still found time to read the week's books.
Yeah, good point.
But before we get into it, let's talk our final DC title, something that we were very much looking forward to. Bug, the Adventures of Forager number one. Now let me go over the creative on this. Writer Lee Allred, art Mike Allred, I believe colors by Laura Allred.
Yeah, you were really looking forward to this. Yes. I was just, I actually, you didn't like this, and I got exactly what I wanted out of it.
What do you mean I didn't like this? I never said I didn't like it.
Oh, I thought you didn't like it.
No, okay, here's the thing. I read it twice. I think now when I don't read books or I don't know what happens in a book, if I read it twice and I read it slower, because sometimes I'm in a mad dash to read the books this week, because I'll usually read stuff in advance and maybe I'll forget stuff, but usually when I don't understand a book right away, I just don't like it. In this instance, I read it twice and now I get it.
Okay, see, the confusing thing about this was, it doesn't appear to be in continuity, really.
It sort of is, because they do mention all the stuff from, I guess, way back when this character was first introduced by Jack Kirby.
Well, yeah, but is this what the New Gods are like in the current continuity? Because this is 100% the old New God shit, and if it's referring to stuff that happened in the original continuity, then it is not post...
Yeah, but as we've seen, the Revenge Society and other things, we slowly start seeing the old DC continuity creeping back in. So I don't question if this is continuity or not, because it seems like all the pieces are there.
Well, this also had, I think that was Sandman 2. I believe he's Sandman 2. But it had, Gaiman Sandman connections, because, Brute and Glob were characters in the run of Sandman where he found that Sandman and he like realized he was a ghost and he basically sent him away and punished Brute and Glob, who were acting as his helpers in a really good Sandman story where he was completely fucking nuts and thought he was defending the Dream Stream.
Mm-hmm.
They just used the original story but then made it out like he was a fucking nutball. He was in this as a serious character. Bug, the Forager, is he lived on New Genesis, I guess, and he was a part of a group of bug people. He was not one of the new gods. But when I say bug people, I mean he's not really a bug person. He's a human who lived with bug people.
And in fact, there was a scene, I forget who it was, one of the Eternal or Celestials. There we go, Celestials. Yeah. Was talking to him, and he was like, no, but you are one of us, though. You're not a bug.
Yeah, Well, the other new gods didn't think much of him.
Well, then there was that one scene, I think it was Orion, was talking down to Bug. He's like, no, you're a bug. And then Batman slapped him around.
Batman decked him, which would not have worked, but Batman's a badass, so yeah, he knocked him out. But the issue in this was he died. Like, he died in the old comics, and he remembers dying. But he wakes up in this place, comes out of a cocoon, and there are these guys fighting him. Mm-hmm. They're trying, because they say you can't wake the sleeper. And he's following, like, this little girl who has a teddy bear and talks through the teddy bear. She's like a ghost girl, but she's holding this. She comes down in the basement and grabs this teddy bear, and the teddy bear has like creepy purple eyes, but it's the one talking. And eventually Sandman finds him. He's like, oh, but this little girl said this. And they're like, what little girl? What teddy bear? What dominoes? Because there are these dominoes set up, apparently in the configuration of a mother box.
Yeah, he's like, oh, let me show you how to do the proper design for a circuit for a mother box. And, he had a moment to himself. He's like, wait, how do you know what a mother box looks like?
Yeah, well, so Sandman finds him, and this Sandman has a whistle.
Oh god, the whistle's great.
And the whistle is made from this mystical metal, and there's from like ancient Egypt, and there's very little of it left. There was only enough left to make a whistle, but when he blows the whistle, it wakes you up.
Well, it doesn't just wake you up.
Or it brings
your dreams
things
into the real
from
world.
The dreaming into reality.
Mm-hmm.
So he blows it, but then this guy, I can't remember his name.
Oh, God, his name is fantastic. I have it right in front of me. General Electric.
Yeah, General Electric, who is such an old-school villain, probably is an old-school villain.
They mentioned from World War II. I wouldn't be surprised if it's from the 40s.
Yeah, and his he has a whistle. And they don't know how he got it, but anyway, the whole point of this is Bug is apparently still dead. But he died. I guess he died in
his corpse is dreaming.
Yeah, in this dream state.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, you know, if you wake up, then you're not dead. If you don't wake up, you're dead. That's how we can tell. But if he wakes up, everything in the dream will go away. It will be destroyed. So it would be bad if he woke up. They were saying, since he's dead, I believe that's where they're going with this. So I don't know exactly where this story is going.
I know where this is going. This is Bug is responsible for saving the universe. But the thing is, he's doing it reluctantly because it's like, I don't want to save the universe. I just want to go out there and have fun and see the universe because I never got to see it. Now that I'm alive again, I want to go see it. And he's sort of reluctantly like saving the universe. And they mention with the philosophy of the teddy bear, they mention how, you know, the new gods preach freedom, but all they do is whatever High Father says. And they specifically mention when they're talking about the reluctancies, like, well, Orion's not really free because everything he does is pretty much done to, in opposition to Darkseid. He doesn't really have freedom. Yeah. Darkseid has power over him.
Yeah, that was actually the most interesting piece of writing in this. Mm. How he laid that out, where he's like, well, I want to do the opposite of everything they want me to do. And if you do the opposite of everything they want you to do, then they're still controlling you.
Yeah.
Because you're just reacting.
If anything, it should be whatever you want to do. And if that so happens to line up with what they're telling you to do, then so be it. And I think that's going to wind up happening in this, where he doesn't want to save the universe and he's sort of reluctantly doing it. But then eventually he's going to realize, I kind of have to save the universe. And even though it means being, in this instance, because of this book, a domino, he's like, well, it's for a good purpose. So I'll stop fighting fate and just, it doesn't happen in this issue, but I get the feeling that's where it's going. Like, he's sort of reluctantly saving the universe, but in trying not to save it, he's saving it. And eventually there's going to come to a point where I think he's just going to actively choose to save the universe.
Yeah, I thought it was cool.
I love this book because if it was a continuing series, it would be like probably like Black Panther and the crew would immediately get canceled. But I think a lot of creators, I don't know, since you've been reading comic books forever, I don't know if you know this, but or if this is not a new thing, but it feels like a lot of comic books are being made into several issues because they're being done as a limited series, and it doesn't really matter how poorly a limited series sells.
No, because you package it and trade, yeah, and then you could still make your money back.
But yeah, I love this title. I was so looking forward to it because I like the idea of the Allred plan. And just usually I like Mike Allred's art, and any opportunity to read a new book from him is always usually fun.
Yeah, and I mean, that's the thing with me. It's he is not a bad writer. He's shown that in the past, but I like his art so much.
Yeah, here's the thing. He's at a point, and I don't know if I've ever read anything where it seems like he's sort of being forced to do it. Everything he does kind of feels like he can kind of punch his own card. He can do whatever he wants, and all the stuff he's done has been kind of fun.
Like, and he doesn't sign exclusive with any company either, which is cool in modern comics because they're so into that, like, oh, we got to get everybody under exclusive. And Allred gets to work for both companies.
It's neat. And Allred's not the kind of guy that's going to be like, oh, well, I really want to write Spider-Man, so I want to be put on a Spider-Man title, or I really want to make money, so I have to be put on a big title like X-Men. Oh, I need to be put on Avengers because I need to make my money. It's like, no, Allred knows what he is. He knows he can make money pretty much doing whatever he wants. So he chooses really creative outlets like Bug and Silver Surfer, obviously, when we go into it later. And I think, what was the other one that he did, the art one?
What was that called?
Art Ops, there we go.
Art Ops, yeah.
And then going back to, I think, from the beginning of this podcast, the FF run, that was really fun. So he's a guy that gets the feeling.
First thing, I mean, he did Mad Men for years, and I never read it, because I just kind of stuck to the big two back then, but first thing I ever read of his was Ecstatics with Peter Milligan, which is to this day like my favorite run on an X book ever. Like I always go on about Morrison's X Men and how important I thought it was because it took these characters who'd just been fucking Claremont's little buddies and everybody else was riffing on Claremont stories and he did something totally different. Fucking Ecstatics really did something different with mutants. Like, that was nothing like anything that had ever been done with X-Men related characters before. And to be fair, they were all new characters. And the only remaining thing we have from that run is Dupe.
I was about to say, didn't he invent Dupe? Or was it Dupe invented that run? Yeah,
him and Milligan invented Dupe. And they had, in those original books, Dupe talked in this weird, like, I think Dupe can talk now, but he talked in, like, this symbol language, and, like, people found a way to translate the language.
I think Wolverine could understand him.
Yeah, Wolverine could always understand it, but the readers couldn't.
But then
they didn't translate, but they actually translated the dupe language, and then, you know, they'd like post online translations for everything he was saying. And hilarious.
My favorite was they gave him a solo title, which already that's funny alone on the
surface.
That
title was great.
But they decided to make him talk in that.
Yeah. Well, you met Dupe's mom.
Yeah.
And he was in love with, fuck, I don't even remember. Kitty. That was a funny book though.
He was in love with Kitty.
Yeah, he was in love with Kitty. That fucking book is great. Yeah, but this was good too.
Yeah, so. This is very much fun. Alright, let's go do it for the DC portion of the show. Let's move on to our only Image title, AD After Death number 3, writer Scott Snyder, art by Jeff Lemire.
This is a terrific finish to this series.
I was lamenting, I'm like, this is 80 pages, Alex. It's like, I'm done with this week's books. All I have to read is AD After Death. And I'm,
but it was,
I think I was more than halfway done and I was like, oh my God, I'm on page 50 and I've been reading this book for like 45 minutes.
But it was 80 pages and we didn't like, we got some of the background, but most of it was all leading. It was explaining exactly what's going on, how we got to where we were, and it was driving the story forward.
Mm-hmm.
So this was at no point a chore, and this was largely like a prose book. Like it was very minimal art in a lot of places and just a shit ton of text, but it was really well done text. I don't know why I like this so much, and I don't like anything else Scott Snyder
does. I like it because it's different. The fact that it's so text heavy. My only complaint, really, is I'm kind of nitpicking here, but I realize why they did it because it's an Image series, and I don't think there's a lot of. What's that?
I didn't say anything.
Oh. I don't know if people are going to be on board for this series going on a little bit longer. I feel like this.
It's over.
No, I'm saying this book would have been better had it been stretched over, like, I think maybe 6, 7, 8, 9 issues, maybe, as opposed to every issue is like 60, 70, 80 pages.
I don't think it matters, because it didn't come out every month. So, it's okay. It was a meaty book. It has a lot of content within each page, and it did tell a contained story, and that's my favorite kind of comic. I almost feel bad spoiling this because but that's what we do on this
show. We read it for a reason, okay?
Out of everything. Yeah, it's like we spoil the shit out of everything, so we're going to spoil what happened. So in the last book, we found there was this, incredibly sick, looked like she was dying girl.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't know what the deal with that was, but we knew that what was going on was at some point they developed a drug that stopped people from aging, but they only had 100 years worth of memory, and then their memories kind of went away, and they started over. They don't forget like basic things.
Let me explain a nitpick thing. They explain how, you know, eventually they lose things because the human mind can only remember so much stuff even after they rejuvenate it and make it refreshed. My only thing is, there were instances where he learned how to play the guitar, and even after he went through the process, he still remembered how to play guitar.
Because here's the thing, and they did some work to explain that away. Like, he was talking about cooking meals for the girl, and he said, like, his hands remembered how to make the meals. They don't forget how to talk. They don't forget how to walk. They don't forget how to do basic things, but they forget things that happened. Like, events that happened, they would forget, but like, skills they learned, they retained. It was more like anything that involves muscle memory, they retained that, but like, you know, who I was dating 500 years ago, you wouldn't necessarily remember that. That was how they explained it.
Mm.
So, you know, it's weird, but for the purposes of the story, it worked better. You knew a big twist was coming, and of course a big twist came in this. So, in the first issue, I think it was, he got this, they had this listening station because there's like this, they live up on a mountain basically. And there's like a huge, like, dangerous electrical storm between the mountain and the ground that never goes away. And they just know the ground's dangerous, but there was this group called Forager, which he knew was a, it was the name of a group that they had sent down to inspect land, like the ground, and see if anybody was alive, because shit had gone bad for the humans who did not live up in the mountains with them. And he got a message from Forager, so he decided he had to go down, and he grabbed the girl who went down. The reason they had this sick girl was they were doing like genetic testing, and they found a gene that was basically an aging gene in mice. And they did tests on this gene, and they found that they could extend the life of the mice by like 35%.
Well, the thing is that they would rapidly age, and they found a way to not only stop the process but reverse it.
Yeah, so, but they could only get it to 35%. And then they realized, okay, we can't kick it up, but there's something in the gene that's, or in this thing that's restricting the thing that makes you not age being released. So they removed that. And at first it didn't do anything, and then eventually the mice started getting, basically they were getting younger. And then they maintained as long as you gave them, like, this pill, this medicine. You had to keep giving it to them. To do human tests, they needed someone who had a defect in this gene. And there were two people on Earth who had this. They described it as, like, an incredibly rare disease. They usually got it when they were like 4 years old, and they didn't stop aging, but they aged incredibly slowly. But what would happen is,
no, I think in the girl, in the instance of the girl, her different parts of her body would age differently. Like, I think
that's, yeah, because of it, that's why they wouldn't live forever. Like, they age slowly, but they said, like, they would look like an 8 year old, but they would have like the hair, but they would be like, you know, 40, and they would have the hair of an old person. And like their liver would develop more than their kidneys, would develop more than their heart, and then their lungs would develop, like the organs would develop at different paces. And eventually, the inconsistency would make the body fail and they'd die. Mm-hmm. They were keeping her alive artificially because they basically used her to develop the drug. And at this point, they were just keeping her alive. They didn't need her anymore. They could produce the drug. But they were keeping her alive because she was what led to their immortality, and they kept saying they were going to fix her, but they never found a way. The main character, he was sort of the one who got her for them, like originally. Mm. So she was living this shit life stuck in a tube is basically where he found her. And he was going to take her to the surface, and they were going to go find humanity, get off the drug so they wouldn't live forever, and, you know, have a normal life. So he goes through all this shit of getting down to the surface, and he fights a fucking monster thing and sees a lot of weird shit. And then he finally, he has a lightning rod that he was carrying with him so that when he goes through the storm, he wouldn't get hit. And it had Forager written on it, so he knows he's close. And then he sees a boat, because what happened on the surface during the time they were up there was there was this shit that spread out and it was killing everyone. So all the people moved to the coast. So he had to get to the coast, and he shows up, he gets to the boat with the girl, and the guy who started all this with him shows up, and he's got these fucking robots with guns. And he tells him, this is the swerve. You've done this before. He's like, every few cycles, and a cycle is 100 years.
Yeah, about 100 years, give or take.
Yeah, that's when they lose their memory. He's like, every few cycles, you'd find these journals you kept. And it was like the first two journals he wrote, and then he stopped. Every 4 or 5 cycles, you'd find these journals. And you would come down, and you would steal Claire, that was the name of the girl, you'd steal Claire, and you go off to find humanity. And one time you went down and you discovered that people, there weren't a lot of them, but they did come back. and they rebuilt society. He's like, and you came down with her, and you got on the boat, and you went out, and then you eventually turned around, and you came back, and you begged for us to take you back. He's like, you've done this multiple times, and every time you do it, you go less and less far.
Yeah, you travel less and less, yeah.
Yeah, you basically chicken out. And the important thing about this was this time when he discovered the journals, he had the realization that basically he's been a coward his whole life. And this guy is telling him, you are a fucking coward. You do this every time. But he said, since each time you go out, you go less and less far. You're sort of like evolving. Like eventually you're going to realize you belong with us. And he's like, no, I don't. He's like, this time I'm really going to go. And they have a bit of an argument and a fight. No, you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it. And the book actually ends without them showing if he did it or not, but he's got a foot in the water. So they're indicating he's actually going to do it. But what the guy told them was, and the important thing about this is that guy had absolutely no reason to lie. He did not need either of them.
Well, you kind of got that for a second because they show the little girl and she's sort of panicking. She's like, no, I want to go.
But but he said she's done that every time too. Mm. But he had no reason to lie. That's the thing. He's like, so humanity rebuilt, but that was like 2,000 years ago. He's like, shit is worse now. That's all gone. There's no one alive down here. And he doesn't say, no, I don't believe you, but he's like, no, I'm leaving. And that was the important part. He didn't want to live this life anymore. This life of nothing where this thing would constantly repeat. He'd go 100 years and everything would be fine. He'd go 200, everything would be fine. 300, everything would be fine. 400, he'd find these fucking journals and he'd decide to do the same thing. The message he heard from Forager is a message he left to be played out because the guy told him, you and Inez, this girl who he off and on been hooked up with, you guys were the Forager group. This was you. You were the ones who originally went down and said you were going to find people. You were the one who sent the message telling you to come down here. It was all you. You set all this up. It's always been you. And, you know, now it's too late. There's nothing here. You can't even do it. But he didn't care because this time he'd come to the realization that this was no life to live.
Yeah, he realizes that he's been running from death his entire life. There's even this instance where they talk about when he first was on the helicopter ride to get the immortality and live on top of the hill. You know, at first he was like, I'm just petrified of death. I'm so worried about this death. It's always running right around the corner. I've had to live with it my entire life. I saw my mom die and I'm just, after a while, it's just like, you know, he realized from writing all these books, he's like, there was never really an ending. There were like facts that he had, and there were some things that happened in his life. And for once, he just said, you know what? I'm sick of running afraid anymore. This is a natural part of life. I'm just going to live it out. I'm going to finally write a book that has an ending.
Well, yeah. And the other thing was they told like the really powerful story in the last book about his mom when she was dying. And she was like kind of going crazy and, you know, her son had died and she was talking to him and she was like, she was completely out of it. And she told him, you know, like, oh, you're married now and your brother's married and having a good life. And he's, you know, finishing school and he's got a job. And then she suddenly, like he thought, she suddenly realized that was all bullshit. And she remembered what actually happened and she like screamed. And this event is what made him so terrified of death. But he realized she wasn't screaming because that was all bullshit. That's not what the fear was, because he had the same reaction when he read the books. He's like, what she was screaming about was she'd realized that she had forgotten her life.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized that in living this way, where every 100 years your memories are all gone, he couldn't remember his life. And because of that, he couldn't remember who he was. And that was terrifying to him. That was way worse
than
death.
Like, he was starting to forget his mother's face. He was forgetting everything about his mother. If it wasn't for the books that he'd read, he forgot a lot of stuff. Like, in some stuff, he instinctively knew, like, the playing of the instruments and whatnot. But all the stuff that he mentioned that stuff from his childhood he'd forgotten.
It was the important shit that he forgot.
Yeah.
Like, you can remember how to talk, you can remember how to cook, you can remember how to ride a bike, but you can't remember your own mother's face. You can't remember any of these important moments in your life, the things that are really important to us. Not things you can do, but things you experience. That's what you forget. And when you forget that, you're no longer who you are. Which isn't a profound statement, but it was told very well in this story in a really good way. And he basically, what they did was they took this examination of what human nature is and they mixed it into a sci-fi story. But it being sci-fi didn't take away from the message they wanted to relate. And that was really cool. And this is something that I think if you went six issues, like you were saying, I mean, unless, did you mean it should be six issues? Like this should have been longer. Did you mean it should be six issues? They should have divided it up into 22 pages each.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that what you meant?
That was okay. My thing. It wasn't so much the reading that I had a problem with. It's just like 80 pages. I'm like, you're asking a lot. You're asking basically people like us and the Snyder hardcores are the only people that are reading this book.
Yeah. And this was LaMire doing the art, right?
Yeah, this isn't LaMire writing. This isn't
This is the best art I have seen him do in this book. Like, he does Royal City, and I like Royal City, and I think it fits. The art in this I find to be much more impressive. Like, some of the bigger page stuff. And to be fair, he's getting to draw more visually interesting stuff than what he does in Royal City, which is about a city and normal people.
Mm-hmm. And they all look freaked out like they're meth heads.
Yeah, like, I mean, they kind of look like that in this too, except going along with my, I think they're supposed to look like that in Royal City, the guy he talked to at the end looked fucking 100% normal.
Mm-hmm.
So he is drawing them like that on purpose now,
I
think.
I think it's also because it's like, okay, he draws a couple of panels in an 80-page book as opposed to, I need to continue drawing these characters monthly.
He could put more time into it. You think that's it?
Yeah. But then, you know what? On the flip side, we've talked about this before. It's an Image title. It can come out whenever he wants it to come out.
Yeah.
Maybe there is something to what you were saying earlier, that maybe this is the way he wants it to look.
Yeah, I guess. This was really good, though. That comic book discussion group I went to and I'm going to again, as you saw, they finally voted.
Oh. You know what? And honestly, after they do Vision, you should consider pitching this idea of this book to them.
That's what I was going to say. I was going to pitch this. I don't think they would ever go for this because how do I sell this? It's like, Snyder. How can I talk this
it's
book
Snyder.
Up?
That's all you need. That's all you need. It's Snyder.
Yeah, but they did Court of Owls and they didn't all like it. So, but I mean, that, what's that, Wicked and the Divine he does?
Mm-hmm.
They have that and they have The Wake on the list. I don't really want to fill their list up with fucking Scott Snyder books.
No, but stuff like this, it's fine.
Yeah, but this was really fucking good. And I'm sure the comic shop would like to sell three fucking $6 comics.
Exactly. Well, maybe.
And probably when this comes out, it's going to be like a $25 hardcover.
You know how we can convince them to read it? I can cut this up and I can make this a video now. You can have them listen to it.
I'm so fucking worried about the goddamn Vision thing when I go in there and I'm going to talk for like 35 minutes in a row and not let anyone else talk.
I'm worried you're going to spoil it.
What happens later?
Yeah.
I don't need to. The first six issues of that book are fucking great.
And I envy them because remember I wasn't on board with the title after the first issue. I had all these questions. I'm like, wait, where are the Avengers and why are the Avengers are cool with this? And it wasn't until later that we read the later issues. I was right to ask those questions because the Avengers were not cool with Vision doing all this. And it's the reason why they sent, what's the name of the kid?
Victor.
It's the reason why they sent Victor in. It's like, yeah, they're not cool with the idea that Vision is making this family.
I'm most hyped that they're doing it because Lauren will now have to read Vision.
Oh.
And she has so fought against it, and I've, like, so pushed it on her, and she just wouldn't fucking read it. Now she has to.
She do that, and then Howard the Duck.
No, because I don't want to do comedy, because it's hard to discuss comedy books.
What about Spider-Woman? That last arc. Which, by the way, I got signed by Dennis Helpless.
They got a lot of books on that list. Like, I don't know why they keep adding new stuff. Because they have so many, like, Saga's still on there. So, it was either this or Saga, and this got the nod, but Saga's going to be next.
I will say this. Saga is a slow starter. Like, I didn't get into Saga, because remember we read Saga, and it wasn't until, I think all three of us, I don't know about you, but me and Dave for sure, we didn't get into it until, like, the second volume. I read the first volume, and I was like, okay, what's the big deal? I'm like, this is okay.
And I mean, they do this because it's a discussion group, and it's actually gotten really big for them. There were a shit ton of people there last time, but I mean, still, the primary is to get people to buy books. And I think if you can get some people hooked on Saga, there's like 8 more trades they can buy.
Mm.
So, I mean, for their business, it would be better for them to do Saga. Like, if everybody likes Vision, they can buy the second trade of Vision, and then they're done.
Well, if they like Vision, they can go buy him Batman. All right, let's move on to Marvel with Avengers issue 7, writer Mark Waid, art by Mike Del Mundo. I don't think it was him, but that's what I'm getting off the comic list, though.
This I like this more than every previous issue of Avengers.
I also
had a different artist.
I will say this as well. I also like this way. I like the way Wasp is written this way more than her solo title.
Yeah, she's a different character in this, though. Which I mean, Wade referenced her solo title,
mm-hmm.
but the character is very different. But this still had the cute thing of, so what happens is Dr. Doom shows up, the infamous Iron Man. He shows up and they're all ready to fight him, but he's like, no, no, I'm a good guy. But Wasp, who's like a super science nerd, is super into him because Dr. Doom is a fucking genius who invented a time machine. So she's super into him, and he's like, I need the Avengers for a mission because I can't do this. And I never buy his reasoning for not being able to do it. Like, oh, I can't go to this place because it was someone who was very important to me. And then he fucking shows up anyway. But he wants to send primarily Wasp in to this summer camp because people are fucking around with magic.
Mm-hmm.
So Wasp isn't terribly good at this. He casts a spell to make her look like a camper, and she goes in. The first thing she does is like, hey, you guys know anything about people doing some magic? So she's not good at it, but then she wanders into a cabin, and there are a bunch of young girls sitting around with like a fucking pentagram of candles, and they're doing something. She's like, hey guys, can I hang out with you? And they're like, yeah, sure. And they're like, oh, can you help us out? She's like, yeah, I'll do anything. And they're like, oh, awesome, you could be our sacrifice, because they have teamed up with the demon to get the power to they're like a young women's leadership group. Like, one of them wants to be president and one of them wants to do this and do that.
Runs a corporation. So
so they're gonna kill someone as a sacrifice to a demon who will allow them to accomplish their goals. Well, she basically yells for the Avengers to come in, and they do, and they put a stop to it. It's very ridiculous because they couldn't like fight them like full on, because even though they had like demon powers, they were still young girls. So they couldn't really fight him, but eventually Doom, teaming up with her, because he has to team up with her to make this work, casts a spell that will basically suck all the demon shit out.
Mm-hmm.
And Doom is like, this one girl, like, she's getting sucked into the portal, and she's like, oh, she's the one who started all this anyway. Let her be sucked in
the portal. It's all her fault. Yeah, she's the one that corrupted all these girls.
And you read this and you think, oh, so Doom's still not totally a good guy, but he's not. It was a test. And Wasp ended up saving the girl. And he doesn't tell her this, but he, like, through his own internal narration, he reveals that the reason he did this is, you know, she's a genius and her dad was Hank Pym, and Hank Pym wasn't always a good guy. So Doom has apparently been basically tracking down evil geniuses.
Yeah, that's been his gimmick the entire time. Is now that he's a good guy, He knows where all the bodies are buried, at least as far as in the supervillain community. And basically he's going after everybody because he knows everybody now.
Yeah, so the whole reason he did this to test if she was going to be, like, evil. And her going out of her way to save this girl and him talking to her made him realize, no, she is 100% good. There's nothing wrong with this girl, so everything's fine. And then they're in, like, the Avengers trophy room, I guess, and they see the Here Lies Avenger X thing. And nobody knows what it is. They don't know what it's in reference to. And I think that's because the ones who saw it were like Falcon and maybe it was Wasp. They wouldn't have been around for this. Like, none of those Avengers were present when they saw it.
Of the Avengers, who would know? I don't think any of them.
Quicksilver?
He's not on that team.
But he's on the Unity Squad.
Yeah.
It would have been Quicksilver, Hawkeye,
Scarlet Witch. Cap, and Steve.
Scarlet Witch. Yeah, none of the Avengers who were there were on the team for this.
Hey, since we're talking Doom, can I explain to you what's going on? The infamous. I haven't been reading it, but I've been reading reviews.
Sure.
And I know what's going on. So, Doom's mom is back, right? And he's trying to impress his mom because he's a good guy now. He's like, oh, I want my mom to love me, so I'm going to do all these nice things. You know, guess who his mom's dating?
Who?
Maker.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And there's this thing where he's like, Richards, you're back? And the whole thing is now, it's like, they've done that thing that I've been secretly hoping they've been doing this entire time. It's like, well, Doom's a good guy now, so at some point he's gonna meet up with Maker, right?
Huh.
Evil okay. Richards. So it's like, I'm waiting for that issue to come out, but I don't think they've done the issue where they finally throw down. It's a slow burn right now. So I'll let you know. I mean, I'll read it anyway, but I'll see if it's any good. If it's any good, I'll recommend it to you.
Okay.
All right. Since we're talking all things Avengers, let's talk our other Avengers title, Uncanny Avengers, issue 23, writer Jerry Duggan, art by Pepe Lazar.
Okay. So, couple things happened in this. The main one was Wonder Man kind of popped out of Wonder Woman.
I mean, Rogue.
And, or Wonder Woman. Rogue. Sorry. And what they, my Wonder Woman, it wasn't year one, it was Earth one.
Ah, okay.
It just finished. So, yeah, so he popped out of Rogue. And they determined what happened was, when she kissed Deadpool, and this opened up very funny, actually, where, like, she was sleeping and, like, Deadpool was there putting his costume back on. And he was basically, she's like, did we sleep together? And he basically tricks her and then reveals, oh, Wonder Man's back now. What happened was, when she kissed
Deadpool,
his healing factor, like, short-circuited her powers, which allowed Wonder Man to escape.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently this was the only thing they hadn't tried. So
I like Beast. First he was happy to see Wonder Man because that's his boy. But then second of all, he's like, that's the one thing we didn't try.
Yeah. So that worked and it got Wonder Man out. And then Deadpool had to reveal that, you're broke because we had some money and then we ran out of the money.
He's all,
I realized like you're rich
and you're kind of dead. You were kind of gone. So we decided, hey, we'll spend your money.
So we spent your money and you own this theater. We could still get your money back though. We could sell the theater, the one that we had like our little museum in. This was our base. And they go to like a real estate agent and he tells them, yeah, that's worth nothing. Because the problem is, okay, everybody knows this was an Avengers base. So somebody buys this. And then a villain who doesn't know you moved out comes to attack and kills the people who bought it. And everybody knows this. Like he kills them or he turns them into monsters or whatever. It's terrible. You can't sell it. So this is completely worthless. So they don't have any money. I don't remember what the hook in this was. I just remember a lot of Deadpool comedy. Well, I know Rogue, they were wondering if she'd still have the super strength and all that shit, and she apparently does.
Oh, God. That's the one thing I have a nitpick on. I'm like, that's just lazy writing, because it's like, you want Rogue to have her powers, because that's how everybody remembers her.
Rogue always had the, she had the powers of, young Captain Marvel, mm-hmm. I guess it was. I honestly don't remember this character's history, because she almost killed her.
Yeah.
And she absorbed so much of her power that she retained the power. So apparently having Wonder Man in her for so long allowed her to retain some of those powers.
Okay.
Not the energy shit, but like the super strength and the flight and that. So.
But then this also had the subplot of the return of Cable.
Cable. Well, the return and the exit of Cable. So, Synapse is hanging out in, like, Cable's hospital bed. You know, he's brain dead and that. But she can do the fuckery with people's nervous systems and minds and shit. So, she's trying to figure out what happened to Cable. And she comes up with the realization that maybe Red Skull didn't fuck him up. Maybe he did something. And she touches, the arm where the AI lives, and she gets sucked into Cable's brain. So that makes her realize, okay, there's something of Cable still in here because I'm in his brain. So she fights Strife, evil Cable, and she fights herself in the future, but it's evil her.
Yes.
And then finds Cable, and Cable reveals, like, yeah, but that future's not gonna happen because that was you before it was you who was trained by me.
Thought that was a little confusing, but whatever.
Yeah, and he revealed he had to basically hide his mind so that Red Skull couldn't get him and then get access to time travel. So that was the reason he did this, which we already knew because he said that's why he was doing this. But he wakes up, he's fine, and he says, Synapse, you're going to be all right. And then he teleports back to the future. And Cable leaves. So Cable no longer a part of the team. And I thought this read like an ending to me.
Yeah, because there was that part where Rogue's looking at the frame picture of the Unity Squad, which, by the way, how long were they a team? A year?
Like a year.
She's looking fondly at the years that they were, they've been the Unity Squad. It's like, okay, whatever.
They had like, you know, Cable leaves, Wonder Man is gonna do his own thing, we think. They're all cleaning their shit out of the base, and she's looking at this picture, like, wistfully remembering their long year as a team. Cap picks up Deadpool and tells him he's got work for him, which explains why Deadpool was working for Evil Cap in whatever comic that was. And you thought it was going to end? Like, it seemed like an ending? But no, because they had an advertisement for the next issue, and it just said, like, Secret Empire.
Which, by the way, this is the first time we've been solicited a tie-in for Secret Empire, and I just groaned. I'm like, oh, God, why?
I haven't hated Secret Empire as much as everyone else. I don't love it, but I don't hate it. But so
I wanted to do the moratorium. It's like, can we just not read any of the tie-ins?
No, because I'm reading this book. Like, I'm going to keep reading the books, even if they have a tie-in. I'm not going to read extra shit.
Okay, then no, that's what I meant. Let's
like,
not
it's, yeah, it's not like it's, oh, Captain Marvel is a Secret Empire tie-in. No, I'm not going to fucking read that. But if it's one of the books we already read and it's a tie-in, yeah, I'll read it.
All right, since we're talking the Unity Squad, which has a bunch of mutants, let's talk X-Men Blue number 3, writer Cullen Bunn, art by George Molina.
Okay, so they found the nice Sentinels in the last issue.
Well, they're not really nice Sentinels.
Well, I want to point out this was good writing because I predicted exactly where it was going as soon as I saw who was responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And that's good writing. Like, it made logical sense. So the X-Men team goes and they follow these mutants and they find out that who's behind them? It is Bastion. Bastion was a combination of Master Mold and Nimrod in the Zero Hour. What the fuck was that story called? It was a really shitty X-Men story that had a really underwhelming ending where the government had hired this guy, Bastion, who they didn't know was a Nimrod Master Mold combination, who was going to exterminate all the mutants. And he eventually stopped because S.H.I.E.L.D. showed up and told him, this isn't happening anymore. It was like the most underwhelming ending to a shit storyline ever.
Was it Operation Zero Tolerance?
That was it. It was complete shit. It had the shittest ending ever. Like, the X-Men weren't even victorious. It was just S.H.I.E.L.D. came in and saved the day. It was so bad. But apparently Bastion was still vaguely around. Hope, another terrible character, almost killed him. But he used Nimrod's time-displacing powers to move into the future. And what happened was he made these friendly sentinels because Beast figured this out. He said the mutant race has to be saved after, you know, I guess after House of M and after the Terrigen Mist. The mutants are so depleted that he had to build the mutants back up. And Beast determined he's a robot. He's in utility mode.
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean? Well, he has to get back to the state where he can accomplish his goals. And that was he had to get mutants to build back up so that he could exterminate the mutants. And he didn't lie to them. He flat out told them this when they asked him, like, well, why do you want all the mutants to come back? Oh, so I can kill them all. Right now, mutants aren't a threat. I need mutants to be a threat again so that I can kill all the mutants. It was completely ridiculous, but when you consider he is a machine and he has to follow programming, it 100% makes sense.
Yeah, I think so, Beast used the analogy. He's like, imagine a machine that cleaned up your house, but then imagine what would it do once it was all clean. He's like, eventually it would start wrecking stuff and start wrecking up walls, so wrecking up the house so it can clean it again.
Yeah, which is hilarious, but that's the situation they were in. But the thing to remember is they start fighting the Sentinels and fighting him, and he's not fighting back. Because he doesn't want to kill them. He needs to keep them alive and safe so they can make more mutants so he can kill them. So he eventually teleports away, and Jean is talking to Cyclops. She's like, I don't really feel good about this. Like, he wasn't trying to hurt us.
And then I think one of the X-Men, I forget who it was quick to point out, yet.
Yeah, that was the thing, but she's like, yeah, but, you know, and he even said, like, you guys are going to be dead before I do anything. Like, it's going to take a long time to fix this. I'm just trying to fix it so I can kill you in the future. But they weren't cool with that, so they fought him off, and he went away, and they were discussing whether they did the right thing or not. And we don't know.
Yeah.
This is so much more interesting than X-Men Gold.
Isn't that why we dropped Gold? Remember, for the longest time, I thought Gold was going to be the winner title and X-Men.
Well, because Gold is very much going for, like, the old school X-Men feel. And this is doing something, even though this has the old school X-Men in it, it's doing something different.
Well, it has the old school Sentinels, it has Magneto. In fact, I would argue the opposite. I do like it because it is.
Magneto is in a different situation. Magneto is a good guy. He's like sort of running. He's in the Professor X role, sort of, but they don't trust him. And while these are the original X-Men, they are different. They are fighting against who they would have become. Like, Beast is already different from the modern day Beast. Cyclops is different. Jean Grey is different. Iceman is different. Angel is different. They're all different from what they would have become, and they don't want to become what they would eventually become. So everybody's different in it. Whereas in X-Men Gold, everyone is trying to be the way they used to be. They're trying to fucking play softball. They're trying to hate the Jews and hate the Filipino president or whatever. And that's what that book's about. Whereas this book is doing new things with the old characters, the other book is doing old things with old characters.
Although, as long as we're talking old characters, I forgot, and I was going to pitch it as a new story, but then it was brought to my attention that they did in the issue of X-Men Blue number 1, I don't remember, the teasing of Ultimate Wolverine's son.
Yeah, that's on the cover. I don't know Ultimate Wolverine Son. When I heard it was going to be Wolverine Son, I thought it was Daken.
No, they were quick to point out it's not Daken. It's, in fact, his son from the Ultimate Universe.
Yeah, that's weird. There are too many Wolverines. Can't we just get all new Wolverine on this team?
I think what they want to do, and I think this is probably the way to go, just keep it the five.
Well, but they're going to bring Ultimate Wolverine's son.
I don't know if he's going to be...
Who, as far as I know, was never over.
I've
been told that.
Yeah, well, nothing in the Ultimates was really over.
Well, the beginning.
Yeah, I'm saying toward the end, though.
Miles was sort of over. He couldn't save it, but... It's not like they're putting fucking Bombshell on the team. Or those other jobber
characters. Cloak and Dagger, remember that toward the end?
Oh, God, Marvel's still trying to, because they're doing a TV show, aren't they?
Yeah, I'm not looking forward to that.
They're fucking trying to get Cloak and Dagger over hardcore.
Good luck.
I hope they have the original origin of, like, them getting injected with experimental drugs that gave one of them light powers and one of them powers to connect to the Dark Force dimension, because that's what drugs do.
Didn't they retcon that and just make them mutants?
Yes.
Okay.
But I want the original origin.
Yeah, there you go.
Drugs.
Drugs are great.
And they have to feed each other, and that's why they're fucking.
Yeah.
Because that's romantic and shit. They need each other to live. They cannot separate from each other.
How come there's no porn parody of that yet?
Tyrone, and because they're not over enough. Yeah.
Well, since we're talking I can't think of the word.
Yeah, I don't know where you're going with this.
People that are in some way, shape, or form connected to each other. Kingpin, issue 4, writer Matthew Rosenberg, art by Ben Torres.
Another excellent issue of this book that's probably going to get canceled because people don't want to read about fat people.
I'm shocked it hasn't been canceled yet.
I don't know how it's selling.
Because he's white. No, I'm kidding.
They keep the book because he's white.
I think they keep it around because everybody like me reads all the Kingpin dialogue in The Voice.
You know what? If this book doesn't get over, what they should do is they should rename Kingpin the Funkosaurus and have him dance.
Yeah.
And give him two hot black girls to dance around with him.
Funky.
That's what WWE did. I don't think Brodus Clay is over in TNA. And he's not the Funkosaurus anymore.
Or as I explained to you on Fox News.
What? You told me the Funkosaurus goes on Fox News.
He's regularly on Fox News and he's just
a guy. Has he taken over Bill O'Reilly's show?
Not yet. Give it time.
Didn't they give Bill O'Reilly's show to Tucker?
Yeah.
Tucker's a little more hardcore than Bill.
A little bit.
He's more intelligent.
But then he has the bow tie, so he loses.
He does have that fucking bow tie.
I mean, I do like it because it's like it's a gimmick and he got it over. But it's like, okay, now you're established.
Hey,
you're established.
He was the conservative guy on MSNBC, which means he might have some balls because he actually had to defend himself. Unlike Bill O'Reilly, who'd bring people on a show and they'd make him look like an idiot, and then he'd just talk over them.
Hey, he's doing it for the folks. He's doing it for you, dude.
Bill O'Reilly, dude. I hated him so much. He had no balls.
But believe me, nobody lost sleep.
Yeah, they did, because fucking Fox's ratings are down the shitter because he's not on anymore. People watched him. He used to beat Raw. Raw, while losing viewers, is now technically doing better in the rankings because Bill O'Reilly is gone.
I didn't know what the ratings were for
Bill O'Reilly. It used to be like Bill O'Reilly would be the only thing that beat Raw.
No, but I'm saying I don't know what the ratings are doing with him now gone.
On Fox?
Yeah.
Not as good.
No.
Because Bill O'Reilly was like their big hit.
Where'd you read that?
They should give Rush Limbaugh a TV show.
Yeah, for some reason why he doesn't want to do it. I mean.
Because he did it back in the day.
I still think he's self-conscious because he's so fat.
He's not as fat anymore, though.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know why. I think the thing is, if he went to TV, he wouldn't be top dog anymore.
Well, no. Well, he could be, though, if he had Bill O'Reilly's slot. He might be able to. He could talk shit about Donovan McNabb and shit again. Everybody call him.
And he gets kicked off TV. Because
he is. motherfucker. I still remember, that is the funniest fucking thing I've ever seen, because I was watching that when it happened. And I don't remember if it was Jerry Rice, it was someone who was on the fucking thing, and when he said that, they had the split screen, and the black dude fucking put his head in his hands and shook his head. He's like, why the fuck did you just say that? It was so, and he got fired. It's like he fucking knew. Oh, that was great.
He should just come back, and that's the first
but
thing he does.
At least he fucking knew something about football. It wasn't like when they fucking put Dennis Miller on Monday Night Football and nobody knew what the fuck he was talking about.
To be fair, that's the only reason why I've ever watched football.
Was for fucking Dennis Miller?
Yes.
Jesus. They lost viewers over him.
I found his HBO show enchanting.
It's like, motherfucker, talk about football. Don't talk about fucking 12th century wars and shit. Like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. Dennis Miller was too intelligent for football.
Think about that.
Or he wasn't, because he didn't realize the fucking football fans didn't know what the fuck he was talking about. Stop saying that shit. Because you don't want to hear that. You want to hear him talk about football. And then they brought fucking John Madden back, and he's fucking drawing stars and shit all over the board. Giving his fucking wonderful insight. The goal of football is score more points than the other team. He actually said that once.
I know.
Fuck. It's like, Jesus, John, you old bastard. Ace is the place.
They like to have fun.
They like to. That's what he was. He was pretty much fucking JBL. All these teams, they love to have fun. And Al Michaels would be there like, yeah, John, that's right. Jesus fucking Christ.
All right. What does any of this have to do with Kingpin?
Nothing. Kingpin was really good. So Kingpin was accosted in an alley with his lady writer friend. And he straight up fucking murdered those fools.
It was awesome. And then she was doing like, oh, six people died. Why isn't it showing up in the newspaper?
He's like, oh, well, there's a lot of stuff happens in this city. But she was upset because she got blood on her. So she went home to, you know, wash her or whatever, and then she goes to her custody hearing, and she's talking to her ex-husband. He won't even look at her, and she's all upset, and he's got his lawyer there. She doesn't even have a lawyer. But then suddenly her lawyer, hired by Kingpin, shows up, and her lawyer talks to his lawyer, and we don't know what's said, but suddenly joint custody has been agreed to. And she's like, oh, that's great.
And he's going to pay, what's called, alimony.
He's going to pay her.
Not alimony. Kid support. Child support.
Yeah, child support. So they're going to have joint custody, but he's going to pay her child support, and he's 100% happy to do this. So we don't know what, if Kingpin threatened him. He didn't look scared. Kingpin must have given him something that he wanted. So they got joint custody now, and that's actually pretty decent, a Kingpin, because it's like, he didn't, like, you know, threaten his life, and she got full custody. The dude still gets to see his kids, but she gets to see the kids, too. They have joint custody, so it's all good. And then she goes back, and she's talking to her boyfriend there.
Oh, this is the best part.
No, that was at the end.
I know. I was getting ahead of myself here.
She's talking to the boyfriend, and then some stuff happens, and she's in a place interviewing a guy about Kingpin because she wants to write a story, and she gets a bag over her head and gets dragged out, and it's Tombstone. And Tombstone's super fucking pissed because that information he gave got leaked out. She's like, I didn't fucking leak it. It wasn't me. And he's like, I don't give a shit what it was. He's like, Fisk stole that shit. He put it out. You wrote this story, and this guy was tied in with me, and you exposed him, and that caused me fucking money. So I don't give a shit if you work for Kingpin. You're fucking dead. You have to die now. And then he's got the gun to her head, and then all of the dudes get shot, and he fucking runs away because he's getting shot at. And dudes in masks come up, like, you know, ski caps, not like superhero masks. And she's like, oh, please don't kill me. He's like, kill you? You work with us.
Ooh.
And she goes, but she understood, like, she knows she's in some shit, but Kingpin did save her. And Kingpin, like, tells her, you know, all right, I'm going to leave a couple guys with you. And she had this talk with Kingpin, and he was talking about how Vanessa, his dead wife, she used to make him these pancakes, and they were the best pancakes ever. And he could never find pancakes like it again, but then he's having breakfast with Norman Osborn. And Osborn cooked pancakes, and they tasted just like hers. And it turns out they were just the recipe on the back of the Bisquick box.
I would have been mad.
And she never told him. But the reason those pancakes were important was because she was the one who made them for him.
But the funny part is like, when she was making the pancakes, she's like, well, you can't see how I make the pancakes.
Yeah, she'd never tell him. And he thought it was because she wanted to have something over him. He can't know how to make these fucking pancakes. But then he found out the pancakes weren't actually special. It was because she made the fucking pancakes.
She'd have been like, I'm glad she's dead now.
But he's telling her this personal story. You tell Kingpin's kind of into this broad. That's the thing. And at the end, she's like with the dude, and they're getting ready to get down. And fuck, Kingpin's standing on the street watching them through the window. Creep ass. So it leads you to believe Kingpin's going to have this fucker knocked off. But we got to see if he can do it or not, because he's presenting this as if he's going legit. And that's why he wants her to write this book. Like, admit all the shit I did. It has to be 100% honest. That's what Vanessa would have wanted.
Oh, that
because
was
she never knew about his criminal life.
That's a lie.
That's complete bullshit. She fucking knew about his criminal life. She wasn't an idiot. But yeah, so it's just building the story, and it's like, we know Kingpin's bad, but he's trying to pretend he's not, and she wants to believe that he's gone good, because everything that's happened to her, like, he is only, as far as she knows, he is only killed in self-defense, and he only sent those guys because she was going to be killed, and like, they killed them, but they were going to kill her, so they had to do it. Because Tombstone's a bad guy too. So, you know, she's in this middle ground thing. Like, she even, based on this story she wrote about the evil land developer or whatever the fuck, she was telling her boyfriend, she's like, yeah, I don't really feel right about this, because even though, you know, I got this bad guy off the streets, it was basically a hit piece. Like, I was given all the information to write the story. I didn't seek it out on my own. It was given to me, and I did it for Fisk. I didn't do it because I found out about it and I wanted to do it. So she's having a crisis of conscience here. But she likes Fisk. Like, he's a charming dude.
But she's got this other dude on the side that she, you know.
Well, it's not, no, it's not that. It's not that she likes him. Like, she's not interested in him sexually. She wants to believe that he is a changed man. But Kingpin, apparently, they're leading us to believe, wants to get in her pants. So,
it'd be funny if he just stays there and watches the entire time.
He's like, I stare at this wall. I gotta fucking watch that again.
I like to watch.
Watch. Keep kicking him!
Keep pounding her!
Oh, fuck. That was amazing.
Alright. Now, final Marvel book. Silver Surfer 11. Obviously, Dan Slott, art by Michael Red.
So this brought back a previous story, because Silver Surfer and Dawn are 528 million light years from Earth, but Dawn's twin was pregnant, and her water breaks while they're having incredibly... So what happened was, their inn, their little quaint inn, became the most fucking popular place in New England or wherever the fuck they live, because Silver Surfer was there, and Silver Surfer is the most popular guy on Earth because he saved Earth and everyone knows it, and he lived here. So they're super busy, but her water breaks in the middle of this, so they gotta rush her to the hospital. Dawn knows that she's giving birth because, well, she said it's because she's a twin and she could tell, but the actual reason why is she asked Silver Surfer how long since they've been on Earth, and she determined through that she must be giving birth now. So we gotta fucking bust ass back to Earth because I gotta be there. My sister's giving birth to her first kid. But on their way back, Weapon Zero or whatever.
Warrior One.
Yeah, Warrior Zero now, because he was Warrior One.
Oh, that's
but
right.
Silver Surfer defeated him, so now he has to be Warrior Zero. He stops him, and he's like, we're going to fight. So Silver Surfer basically pretends that the guy beat the shit out of him, so because that's the quickest way to do things, and he like fakes like he's dead, and Dawn's like, oh no, Silver Surfer, no! And he almost talks shit about her acting, but you know, she's got other stuff on her mind, so they continue on, and then he busts out again, and he's like, haha, I knew you were faking it. So Silver Surfer beats the shit out of him this time, because he's got to get back, and the guy's like, now I'm nothing. But eventually Silver Surfer makes it back. It was a this was all very fun. Silver Surfer makes it back, and they arrive, and she's there with the baby because she already gave birth.
But that's not all.
No, because they reveal that something has happened to their dad. They didn't say he was dead, but they gave every indication he was dead because they did the black border with the smaller picture in the middle, which in Marvel Comics means somebody has died.
Aww.
But he might not be dead, but we don't know. We'll find out in the next issue.
I'm thinking
which
that
might come out in fucking 6 months, the way this goddamn book.
Well, Allred's busy now with his title with his brother and his wife.
Yeah, so I'm sure the fucking book's not going to come out for another 6 months, and then we'll find out what happened. But the thing is, the cover of the next issue wasn't like Dawn crying.
Was it Silver Surfer and
it was like Nora... Dawn like reaching out, and like Silver Surfer was flying away.
Oh.
Which, if her dad died, like, Silver Surfer wouldn't fucking leave her then. Because that'd be shit. Like, he can't do that. Silver Surfer is a hero.
Right.
All I know is, if this book ends, Silver Surfer and Dawn should remain together forever. Because they are the greatest couple in comics, dude. And they've already broken them up once, but then they brought them back together.
Yeah. I don't know, dude. I don't know where they go from here. Because I don't see this book lasting forever. Well, then again, who's
it might not, but the next time I see fucking Silver Surfer, Dawn better be with him.
I would like to see other people write Dawn.
And by the way, at the start of the book, they were fighting the barbarians.
Oh, I can't believe you haven't said that to Coughlin yet.
Who are attacking a colony of sentient bee people.
Because they want their honey.
Because they want their fucking honey. It was great. I love this book.
Let me send that to our buddy Mike Coughlin, who hosts our show at halfguard.com.
Oh, Barbarians. I almost snipped the picture and put it up on Facebook, but I didn't.
I snipped it, but I'm like, I snip a lot of stuff because I post stuff on our Twitter, but I lost track of it. But I do believe I grabbed that panel.
You gotta put this on Facebook for brother Mike. Or Papa Mike. That's what we're gonna call Coughlin from now on,
I've been calling him that forever now.
Oh, is it Papa Mike?
Yeah, with the expressed idea to creep him out.
It but doesn't work.
That's proven hard to do because there's a big threshold with that guy.
By the way, he is not raising a lot of money for Yale. I think people realize he's not like going to be a student at Yale. He's just taking a class at Yale and it costs fucking $5,000. Come on, brother.
Yeah, I don't know if
you could say you went to Yale.
I'm surprised he hasn't hit us up for money yet.
He knows I don't have any money. He listens to the show.
But he knows I have money.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Don't say that. Because have you donated?
No.
You motherfucker.
What, he's a
he
lawyer.
He hosts our podcast. What are you thinking?
He's a lawyer.
We need to sell Comic Conversation t-shirts. Make $5. Kick out at one.
All right, this show is quickly falling off the rails. Let's wrap things up with from Valiant Entertainment. We have Eternal Warrior Awakening, Issue 1. Writer Robert Venditti, art by Renato Rodriguez.
I love these relaunches, dude. I think Exo Manowar is the shit. I think this book was pretty fucking good. What it did was, this is way back in the past, and there's this group called the Fell Legion, which was a dude killed all the leaders of these other warring bands and then took their best men.
Mm-hmm.
And then he kept their heads. And he wanted the fucking head of the Eternal Warrior.
Because he already beat him. He was able to catch his axe when he was trying to attack him.
He took his axe and he fucking threw it at him and stabbed him in the head with it and wanted his head, but when he hit him with the axe, he fell off a cliff and into a river. So he's been sending guys out. He's got to get this fucking head. Eternal Warrior, of course, he's Eternal Warrior, so he healed, but he had no memory of who he was. Presumably because he got stabbed in the head with his axe. So he was living on this farm with this broad whose tribe took him in, and he was a farmer, but he was a really shitty farmer. And there was also a drought happening at the time, so that was no buys. The current geomancer comes and finds him. It's like, hey, you gotta take care of this guy. You gotta bring us back because you work for the Earth.
I'm surprised the Eternal enemy didn't show up.
Well, he's maybe not around at this point. Mm. So he tells him, you know, I'm the geomancer. I can do all this shit, and he makes it rain like Okada. But not with money, with actual rain.
Yes, not with, with fake dollar bills,
so
with his face on it.
Wrestling Connection, it was more like Tatanka, who used to do a rain dance.
But he actually made it rain.
Tatanka, by the way, means buffalo.
Yeah, because they didn't get that over enough when they had the character.
By the way, since I've said that, if I remember this, I'm picking that fucking song coming up.
Next week?
Tatanka, buffalo. It's so bad.
Oh, you're gonna...
I liked Tatanka when I was a kid. You know, I liked him.
Has to be something racially insensitive.
He never lost.
Ah, yeah, but he would beat like jobbers. He never beat like mid-level guys or even top guys.
He beat Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, but that was like Shawn Michaels when he was Intercontinental Champion.
He beat Ted DiBiase.
That's something. I'll give you that.
Yeah. The Million Dollar Man. Kicked out at one.
Yeah, okay, you're gonna stop that now. Let's at least finish the review. We're supposed to have a short show today.
So Eternal Warrior, the Geomancer makes him remember who he is, so he goes, sneaks into the guy. First he makes an army, which he never uses. He gathers up all these other tribes who didn't go with the Fell Legion, sneaks into his room and fucking chops his head off.
Nice.
And the way this worked was, whoever had this wolf jawbone around his neck was the alpha. So he fucking throws it out to all these people, knowing that they will all then fight each other. So he throws it out and they all start fighting, and he goes up and he's like, oh, are you gonna go kill him now? He's like, no, I'm gonna let them all kill each other, and then I have my people going in and they're gonna clean it up. And he's like, you remember how to be a warrior. He's like, well, are you going to go back and tell your wife? And he's like, nah, because now that I remember I live forever, it would suck to have a family, because eventually they'd die and I'd, you know, still be young, which, you know, is not how this happens, because he obviously did have a family and they went to live in hell hiding from Lord Humongous.
Well, but that was when they knew who he was. They didn't know what the gimmick was. And the thing is, the wife already kind of knew he was maybe going to die in that battle. So he's like,
just let her think I died.
Yeah, like, she'd be better off thinking I'm dead, because, you know, if everybody thinks her husband died in battle, it's like, okay, maybe there's a chance that she might be able to move on, get another man. Whereas if it's just Eternal Warrior and he's decided to just buy Felicia her, people are going to be like, yeah, let's treat her like a pariah.
Yeah, so apparently, yeah, it's better to have a husband who died fighting than a husband who abandoned her. So, apparently what this book is going to be about is Eternal Warrior back in the day. Which is cool, because, you know, the art in this was good, had good fights, and we get to see him do some good fighting.
Our old boy Nuthug would probably like this book.
Oh yeah, because it's all fighting.
Tons of fighting, tons of punching.
It is good fighting.
Yep. All right, that's going to do it for this week's books. Let's move on to our final segment this week, a song that Alex hasn't heard yet. Next week's books.
Here's one for the madman from Sudan, Abdullah the Butcher. He's a cutter, and brother, he's a killer.
I can't believe what they did to Larry Shreve. All he wanted was to bleed. Then they said he spilled Hep C. Now he loses all his mind. He can't tour Japan again.
Where did that come from? That was Sex Ferguson.
Yes. Apparently, what's his name? Domino has his own podcast, and he regularly has Sex Ferguson on. He got him to write a song about Abdul the Butcher.
Wait, still? This is current?
I don't know about still, but back in the day when he was still wrestling for New Japan, yeah.
Ah. I will have to look this up.
It's called, the name of the song, I believe, is Gig Me Like Abdullah. Before we get into the next week's books, you have to listen to this chorus. It's just haunting.
Cut me like the butcher. Dice me like the butcher. Gig me like the butcher.
I believe that's the name of the song. Gig Me Like the Butcher.
I gotta find those old Talking Shop podcasts where the Bullet Club guys would just get drunk in Japan and record a podcast. Cause whenever they're on Jericho's podcast, it's fucking great. And Jericho is so out of place in that.
Cause he's, you know, corporate stooge.
Cause he's old.
Yeah.
Jericho's podcast is actually it might be the best wrestling podcast. Because he won't talk shit about the company, but he will have people on who will talk shit about the company. And he'll just be like, ha ha, yeah. But he lets them talk. And even though, like, Anderson and Gallows and shit are in WWE now, when they get drunk and talk, they're still hilarious. So it's good. I told you, Braun Strowman got over with me, not because he became a better wrestler, but he was on one of those episodes. And Gallows told me that Braun Strowman is, in fact, a good brother.
Huh.
And that got him over with me. I'm like, if Gallows likes him, he must be all right.
There you go. But then again, he likes Abdul the Butcher, who likes to bleed on people when he has Hep C.
Well, debatably.
No, I mean, literally by law.
Oh.
He was sued.
Well, they shouldn't have been in the ring with him. I bet Marty Jannetty has hepatitis. And he still wrestles.
Next week's books. I want to get to sleep.
Allegedly.
It's 1 a.m. I want to go to bed. Let's finish this show up.
Allegedly. Okay. Looking through here.
I know you, this is your Friday, but some of us have work tomorrow.
Yeah, I know. I love my Friday. Neil Gaiman's American God Shadows number 3. Still haven't watched that show.
Watch it so I know if it's good or not.
Okay. I heard they had a very explicit gay sex scene that everybody was talking about on CBR. So, there you go.
I don't know how to feel about that. It's CBR putting it over.
If you're not comfortable in your manhood, then you can't watch gay sex. I am looking forward to it.
It's more so that CBR put it over.
I am so comfortable in my heterosexuality that I might even watch that gay sex scene and touch myself. That's how comfortable I am. Okay, Aquaman 23. Astro City 44.
Huzzah!
New storyline. Batman 23. Flash 22. The Button. The finale. Super hyped for that.
I don't get hyped. I stay hyped.
Super Sons number 4. Superman 23. So hyped. Teen Titans number 8. Lazarus Contract part 2.
Nice.
The Wildstorm number 4.
Is it called The Wildstorm or is it called Wildstorm?
It's just called Wildstorm, but I like saying The Wildstorm because it sounds more epic.
Nerd.
You're a nerd!
Wow. Are we reading God Country anymore? I know you forgot to read the last issue. God Country.
I'm not to Image yet, motherfucker.
Except you will be.
Okay, Eclipse number 7.
Ooh, by the way, the writer of that is doing a signing over here.
Oh, cool. You should go meet him. He probably won't have a long line. No, I like his book. I'm just saying. He's not a big deal. God Country number 5. Yeah, I might read it. We put it on the list.
It just made the list.
You just made the list. Royal City number 3.
You stupid idiot.
Yeah. Generation X number 1. With Quentin Quire.
With my boy.
Written by Various. Art by Various.
That's...
Is it like a... I wonder what that means.
No, it has an announced lineup. That it just means Comic List has not bothered to look it up.
Luke Cage number one.
That's mean.
No, I'm not going to read that shit.
It's Luke Cage, come on.
Mighty Thor number 19. What did we decide on Nick Fury? It took a minute to read.
Yeah, it took a minute to read. I don't want to read it. If it's just going to be more of that.
Okay, okay. Punisher number 12.
Which, talk about books that take a minute to read.
Yeah, but I love Punisher.
Yeah.
Because he's white.
It's not really it, but.
No, I just like Punisher. Secret Empire number 2. Ultimates Squared number 7. It's got a little too, so it's squared.
No, it look at
the picture. Do we want to read X-Men Gold? Gambit's on the cover. The art is still by the possible terrorist.
The future terrorist.
You ought to read it?
Nah.
Okay, because we're not up to that many books and we're almost done here.
No, we got enough.
Done. That's the last book.
I'm sure we have more than we'd had this week.
How many count?
All right. We have a grand total of, I don't really count. I just let the Word document do it for me. 17.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we don't need to read X-Men, though.
Told you.
All right. That's it. That's the end of the show.
Ta-da!
All right. Final issue. Storyline. We're confusing you like Uncanny Avengers.
A little bit. All right, this is going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at HalfGuard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, check you guys out next week. And to play us out, more Sex Ferguson.
Fuck you, Kevin Driscoll. You're a joke. You're a troll. Never made it, never will. Now, son, you will burn in hell.
Like me like the butcher. Cut me like the butcher. Dice me like the butcher. Gig me like the butcher.
That song is so great.
That's awesome. All right.
All right.
Later, brother.
I gotta go to bed. All right. Talk to you later.
Night.
Bye.